mothers hug their sons.
This is the Quality News Network. A top U.S. military spokesman says American troops are being attacked more and more frequently, mostly in roadside bombings and suicide car bombings. Earlier this month, Al-Qaeda in Iraq called for its followers to target American forces. More violence is expected with the start of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan on Sunday. On Capitol Hill, the House Judiciary Committee has voted to endorse President Bush's plan for tough interrogation techniques and trials of terror suspects. The White House is still trying to work out a compromise on the bill, since many in the Senate oppose its current form. Also on Capitol Hill today, the House voted to require Americans to show a photo ID in order to vote. The sponsors of the bill say it's a, quote, common sense way to stop fraud at the polls. If signed into law, anyone who wants to vote in the 2008 federal elections would have to present a photo ID. Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate considered a bill to construct a 700-mile-long fence along part of the U.S.-Mexico border. That bill passed the House last week on Thursday. Members will vote on other enforcement measures, including greater penalties for people building tunnels under the border and clarifying the role of state and local authorities in detaining illegal immigrants. In Baghdad, Saddam Hussein was thrown out of court today by the new judge overseeing his genocide trial. After protesting the removal of the previous judge, his lawyers also walked out of the court. In Thailand, the country's king endorsed the army commander who seized power yesterday in a bloodless coup. He'll act as the interim prime minister and says elections will be held by next October. The U.S., Australia, Japan, and the European Union have all condemned the takeover. Officials with the World Bank and International Monetary Fund are expressing concern about the overthrow. Those officials meet this week in Singapore, where they are calling for a return to global trade talks. In Budapest, Hungary, protesters clashed with police for the second night in a row. The clashes began after the prime minister admitted on tape that he lied about the country's economy to win the election. More than 200 people so far have been injured in those protests. 100 arrests have been made. More demonstrations across the country are expected. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In Alaska, ConocoPhillips will not have to abide by a federal requirement to monitor whether its oil exploration activities negatively affect whales. That's at least for now. A federal judge issued that temporary stay after deciding that the monitoring requirements would put an undue burden on the oil company. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology has announced the creation of a program geared toward finding a solution for the world's energy crisis. The Russian space capsule carrying the first paying female space passenger docked today at the International Space Station. Federal Reserve met today. The board decided to leave the key interest rate at 5.25%. Citigroup reportedly in talks to buy hedge fund manager Aramath Advisors. However, the deal would only involve the sale of its non-energy related assets. J.P. Morgan and hedge fund manager Citadel Investment have reportedly agreed to buy Amaranth's energy-related portfolio, and Toyota has announced plans to sell nearly 10 million vehicles worldwide in 2008, which would overtake GM as the number one auto seller in the U.S. Light sweet crude settled today at $60.46 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow up 72 points at 11,613, NASDAQ up 30, S&P 500 up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Welcome, welcome, welcome once again to another edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and just thrilled to pieces to have you along. What a wonderful day of radio we've had here. It's been very busy with Mark Levine. Well, it was great to have Dr. Bill back, followed by Mark Levine doing more than his usual hour, filling in for 2 hours for Guy James. And a wonderful 2 hours it was. And, of course, our good friend Bruce Birch, in truly heroic fashion, arising from his sickbed to bring more conversation radio to the world. And then there's me, just little old me. Now, this evening, we've got a conversation coming. The fact of the matter is we had a couple of conversations scheduled for tonight. The first one I expect to actually take place. The first one will be a conversation with the Reverend Jennifer Butler. Now, she has worked with the United Nations on behalf of the Presbyterian Church for nearly a decade, and she's the author of a new book called Born Again, The Christian Right Globalized, okay? And we're going to talk about the fact that the cancer that is right-wing religion is expanding beyond the territorial boundaries of the United States. Why are we talking about all of these things? Well, you know, it's Wednesday.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight, because Wednesday at Head On is prayer meeting day, a day when we take a look at the excesses of the religious right, whether it be, a former Nazi aircraft gunner who now sits in the Sea of St. Peter and pokes the Muslim world in its billions with a sharp stick. Whether it's that, or whether it's the growing cancer that is the religion industry in the United States escaping its territorial confines, we can take a look at that. There are any number of things that we can, and you know, we can go outside the religion industry boundaries on prayer meeting edition as well. You know that. Anything you want to bring to the program, you are more than welcome to do so. Now, I'd like to share something with you. This is from a story that we started with last night and really didn't do a whole lot of detail into. But it is certainly worth the effort. This is a story regarding what happens to immigrants, undocumented immigrants in this country who get hurt on the job. I told you last night about Jose Hernandez. Now we're going to talk about, just to let you know, just to put a face on the people that the Republican Party is so terrified of, let's talk about Juan Palacios. He's 27 years old. He's a husband. He's a father. He is from Guatemala. And he was doing a roofing job on a Florida home in March. See, people who run roofing companies, they'll hire Juan Palacios because they don't want to pay, a union laborer a fair wage when they can go to the parking lot of the Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever and hire a guy for $2 or $3 an hour, not report it to the government, and see what the difference is. The extra money that's not paid to the laborer, the contractor puts in his pocket, and you know it doesn't really do anything in the long run. It enriches him. It doesn't do anything good for society. And among the other things that the contractor's not doing, he's not paying workers' compensation. Now, in the case of Juan Palacios, a coworker accidentally splashed hot tar on him. When the hot tar splashed on him, Palacios fell 12 feet. He smashed through a glass table and onto a tile floor. He was hospitalized for a week. He was working for a company called Sunrise Roofing. Call it Scofflaw Roofing. He didn't hear from them for the entire week he was hospitalized. And in this newspaper article, the company, Sunrise Roofing, confirmed that it had employed Palacios, but its insurance carrier, the Insurance Company of the Americas of Bradenton, Florida, refused to pay workers' compensation benefits. Now, you tell me how far we are from a slave society when we treat working people that way. You tell me. And you might be interested to know this. You know, remember how when we'd try to find out early in the war how many civilians we'd slaughtered with our shock and awe in Iran or Iraq? I'm sorry. Oh, well, it's only a difference of a consonant, and it may not be that much of a difference after a little while anyway, will it? But we'd try to, and the Pentagon would say, well, you know, we don't count the civilians that we slaughter. We don't go out and count the little massacred three-year-olds or the dead grannies or the pregnant mommies who've been blown into their constituent parts. You know, that's just logistically difficult. We don't count that. Guess what? The U.S. Department of Labor tracks workplace deaths and injuries, but officials haven't assessed how undocumented workers fare. In other words, they don't count those people. Those people don't count. Welcome to the Ownership Society of George W. Bush. Insurance analyst Peter Roussmanier told Liz Chandler, who wrote this article for McClatchy Newspapers, the regulators are rooted in paralysis. They don't want to acknowledge these workers exist, so in effect, they are allowing them to be abused. Few states look for abuses of undocumented workers. They don't care what happens to the slaves, you see. Florida, for instance, recently rejected hundreds of workers' comp claims because they didn't include Social Security numbers. The state Supreme Court halted that last year because the requirement violated privacy laws. Florida, Michigan, Kansas allow employers, get this, to limit benefits or fine injured workers who use phony Social Security numbers. Is there any doubt remaining that we are dealing with a slave caste? Is there any doubt at all? I should think not. And, by the way, Texas, the state of Texas, does not require an employer to maintain workers' compensation coverage. And last year, Texas passed California to lead the company, or the country. Well, what's the difference anymore, huh? Country, company, corporation. To lead the country in workplace deaths of Hispanics. This is the real debate. The debate isn't between, you know, guest workers, my left hind foot. Guest workers. Feh. You don't treat a guest that way. This is the real deal. This is the question we must answer. Are we willing to be a slave nation? Are we willing to be a nation that engages in slavery? It's really that simple. It's not a question of whether people who by their indigenous nature have been wandering back and forth up and down the North American continent for 28,000 years. It's not the question. The question is whether or not we are willing to continue what I hoped we had grown out of, and that is the systematic abuse of indigenous cultures. Did you see the story the other day? A 3,000-year-old piece of stone bearing the first writing in the New World was unearthed down not too far from Veracruz, Mexico. It's related to the Olmec culture. That's right. The Olmecs were writing when most of your forebears were still fighting each other over turnips. The Olmecs were writing before Christ was even born. The Olmecs were writing before St. Peter was a twinkle in his multi-great-grandma's eye. But these are the people that we hate for scrubbing our toilets. Don't we feel good about ourselves? Hurrah! Let's take a break. Want to get in on the conversation? I invite you. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Email to bob@headonradio.com. Again, coming up at the bottom of the hour, a conversation with the Reverend Jennifer Butler. I think you'll find it interesting. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers. Someone who cares. Your own personal Jesus. Someone to hear your prayers. Someone who's there.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
That's right, it's prayer meeting night here in the Cathedral of Common Sense. I'm Brother Bob Kincaid. I like the Johnny Cash version better, personally. 21 minutes after the hour, let's go to the phones. We are joined by our good friend Rick calling from Florida. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, too. Listen, I mean, I don't usually intrude. I like to listen the day after so I can fast forward through the commercials.
don't give people ideas.
I know, horrible. But there's something that just occurred on the floor of the house.
Okay.
That has to be taken seriously, and I'm going to give you a little bit of backstory afterwards.
All right.
They just approved this new federal voter ID. Did you see that?
Yeah, and that blows my mind.
Okay.
Because the things are being struck down left and right on a state level.
That's right. And here's what's important about this, and here's the reason why I called. The long-range plan of this, according to those that I have read and listened to, is to create a Homeland Security ID.
Yes.
And the problem with this is that it's going to create a 3 to 5 year backlog, and people won't even be able to drive if they don't have the proper documentation. And it all starts with this brand-new birth certificate, which I had to acquire for one of my kids. And now I'm going one by one. I have several children, as you know.
Yes.
And this one boy went down to get his Merchant Marine license, and his regular birth certificate that had been around since he had been born was no longer good enough. And so I called up and I said, well, what do we got to do? They said, you got to get the new Homeland Security birth certificate.
Well, has it got the seal of the Reich on it? I mean, what are we talking about here, Rick?
Well, I don't have it right in front of me, but it is a certain raised seal that is on it. And I can't describe it to you because, quite frankly, the kid's out to sea right now. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the point of the matter is, it's a brand new birth certificate. This is the starting point, Mr. and Mrs. America, to prove who you are, if you want to be able to successfully get through the backlog that's going to be ahead of you. Now, I can't tell you what they're going to ask for afterwards, but I will tell you this much. This is the starting point. You must have it. So I'm recommending to all of your listeners that they get the new birth certificate or even a replacement birth certificate. I don't care if your hometowners, I mean, there's small towns, they may not be aware of this yet, but believe me, the new seal is important. It has to be a certain way. You're not going to be able to get it.
And that's not Florida specific.
It's nationwide. It is nationwide. Because, I mean, these kids were born in Saratoga, New York, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, and we live in Panama City, Florida, and he had to have this, or he couldn't get a United Coast Guard Merchant Marine's license. And I'll tell you a little bit about a little backstory on that in a second if we have the time.
Okay.
The point of the matter is that you have to get your new updated birth certificate. Don't let them tell you otherwise. Don't listen to them. Get the new one. There's going to be a fee. There's also going to be a process of what you have to go through depending on the state to be able to verify. One of those is most importantly a copy of your photo ID, driver's license, or identification card. You must send that with them, and they have rules of what you have to answer on each website.
These are like branches on a vine that all go down to a primary trunk, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And it ends up with a national Homeland Security ID.
That's right.
and
which is biometric.
Sure.
Also include your DNA and an RF chip, by the way. And your entire credit and criminal history will be able to be accessible from the metal strip on the back. Yes. That's absolutely true.
You know, one of the things that will happen with this is this will produce an absolutely burgeoning underground black market in false ID.
It's going to
make the problem worse, in other words.
Well, you would think so, but this is pretty tight. This is a pretty tight ID. I've held one in my hand. And I can tell you, this is between the watermarks and the stuttering of the photo where it goes, it's all over the place, and it's going to be pretty tough to duplicate this thing. But the most important thing is that you have to be very careful with it, because the RF chip, they say, is going to be as fragile as a rice seed in a bubble pack. So you can imagine how much you're going to have to take care of this. I mean, that goes out, and it's also interfaced to your toll roads and all these things, but that's going way off the chart. These are things I'm being told by people.
Yeah,
the point of the matter is right now, all people have to be concerned with, your listeners, is to make sure they have the most current and up-to-date modern birth certificate. And here's what's really important. If you have a grandma, a grandpa, your mom, your dad,
yeah.
If they don't have this new birth certificate, they're going to lose their Social Security, and they're going to not have medical care. This is a very important thing for people to take notice of.
Well, does this tie in with a lot of states? Well, and I think the federal government may have touched on it as well. This business of you can't get service at a hospital, no matter who you are, if you can't prove citizenship.
That's right. Yes, it does. It all ties in, but we're on the ground floor, and they're gleefully giving out the information. Sign up now, get this birth certificate, get your new one now, or you're going to be in the back of the line. I wouldn't even have known of it, except for my kid had to renew his Merchant Marine license, and that's when it all came to the forefront. And at the same time, I told you a little that there's some backstory on this. Every person that signs up for a Merchant Marine license is joining the military. Can you believe that? They're joining the military, and they're swearing under an oath to defend the country from enemies, foreign, domestic, that they're willing to be deployed if called upon. And they have to swear that, or you can't get your new Merchant Marine license.
Your kid had to make that oath?
Yes, he did. He had to, or he'd be out of work. He would not get his license. He had to. We went to New Orleans. We went there, and that was it. That's what he had to do. So I'm just trying to warn people, this thing is bigger. But the fact they got it passed in Congress today for this voter ID, this Federal Voter ID Act, it will go to the Senate. They'll pass it. Bush will sign it.
And they will hustle it through before there's a chance of them losing control of Congress.
Well, absolutely they will. I mean, and I'm sure they'll have no problem getting it done, because it's a rubber stamp Congress, and for the most part a rubber stamp Senate. But, you know, just remember what every Republican is getting on TV and saying from Bush on down. There's no chance that they're going to lose. There's no chance. So the fix is already in. They're not going to.
Because Democrats are a bunch of national security sissies. That's the card that's being played.
Basically, the reason why they're not going to lose is because the fix is in.
Yeah, they control the machines. Is that where you're going?
Well, no, I'm not just going there. They control the machines, the medias, and everything else. They control the money. They control everything. I mean, I can't see them losing. I hope we win. I really do hope we win. I'm a registered independent, but the only reason I'm a registered independent is because I have to carry. I burned my card and became one. I'm really a Democrat and always have been forever.
Yeah, they've sort of taught you to be what you are, in other words.
Yeah, and I became an independent because, quite frankly, I hate both parties. I mean, I got to be honest. I hate them both.
Well, you know, we've had conversations with folks down, Brian Moore, who is running for Senate down there in Florida, and he is not a Democrat. He's running as an independent.
Yeah, and I'm all for him. I'll vote for him.
And, you know, I can understand being a little bit less than plussed with one's Democratic Party when one's Democratic senator is Bill Nelson, you know, Joe Lieberman with a better tan.
Exactly. I mean, let's face it. The Democrats before the Republicans were the lock them up and throw away the key crowd way before the Republicans ever thought it was cool to do so. Then they got in power and did the same thing. I mean,
the only thing I can say, Rick, is that we've got one more chance, and I think it is a fleeting chance, to be quite honest.
I do. I honestly agree with you.
We've got to get the present crop of thugs out of Congress.
At least one check and balance, this goes on. This is the message I was just talking to my daughter in Virginia about. And her husband is a Navy man, a submarine guy, and I can't say anything more or they'll have to kill me. But the point of the matter is that if you don't have a check in this government, you're going to have more of the same. Let's not forget that they're talking about they were playing football with bales of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where there was no room in a motor home because they're taking out the money. There's $9 billion missing and an airplane from a wreck, a United States Air Force plane. I mean, there's just...
It's like the MASH episode where the guy was mailing home a Jeep, part by part.
Right. Yeah. Exactly right. I mean, something has to be done for the sake of yourselves. If you want to work at Big Ten Tires to make $8 or $10 an hour... That is your business, and that's fine work, and it's honorable work. And I love Big Ten Tires. But the point of the matter is, if you're voting Republican, there's something wrong with your mind.
If you're working at Big Ten Tires.
Or anything like it.
Well, no, yeah, okay, anything like it, yeah. Because if you're a top trader at Smith Barney or Solomon or whatever, I expect you to vote Republican.
Absolutely, but if you're at this point, where you're voting on these single issues, abortion and gay rights, and that's what makes you vote away your interest. If that's what votes away your paycheck, it votes away your job, votes away your nation, then I would suggest to you, listener, that you're wrong, you're crazy, that you're misled, that you have fallen in some kind of enchantment that I don't even understand.
Hey, Rick, I've got to stop because we've got to go to our interview now.
Absolutely.
It's great talking to you.
Same to you. Listeners, get your updated birth certificate. It's very important. I kid you not. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Rick. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
And from there we go now. We're joined by the Reverend Jennifer Butler, author of Born Again, The Christian Right Globalized. It'll be coming out from Pluto Press, the University of Michigan Press, this October. Reverend Butler, are you with us?
I am.
I am so glad you could join us this evening because I believe this is the topic that you're touching on, which I understand, having read the book, is the expansion beyond the territorial confines of the United States of the religious right. I believe this deserves a whole lot more attention than it is getting these days.
It sure does. I was one of the first people to start writing about this and one of the only ones, and it is not well known, I think in part because many Americans don't follow what happens at the United Nations very closely. It's often not reported on to them, but there have been a whole host of victories for progressive causes at the United Nations, and especially in the recent decade in terms of human rights issues, environment issues.
Women's
reproductive rights.
AIDS, HIV.
Exactly. And what's happened is conservatives have woken up to that, and they're now coming to the UN and lobbying on family values and trying to undermine the gains that progressives have made in the recent decade.
May I ask you, Reverend Butler, whether or not we hurt ourselves when we let them frame their issues with phrases like family values? Because most of what they advance as family values, I don't see as family values.
Well, that is an excellent point, and it's one that I make hard in my book, and it's why I've now become the executive director of Faith and Public Life, which is an organization that is helping progressive people of faith reclaim their voice in the public square. And they need to reclaim their voice on two issues. One, they need to reclaim moral values, and two, they need to reclaim the family.
Let me go one place real quick with you, Reverend Butler. I read the book. and I immediately ran to the index because I wanted to double check. There were some phrases that I didn't see show up in your most excellent work that I think might deserve to be there if there's a second edition or anything like that. And the words I were looking for and I was looking for in the index were dominionism, or Christian Reconstructionism, or the name R.J. Rushdoony.
Yeah.
Because these are the driving forces behind a lot of this stuff, and they're pretty scary. And these are the folks that that are shoving this agenda at us and redefining what they want America to be. And they're very radical, and they're very activist, and they're very motivated.
Those are scary voices. I do touch on the work of Timothy LaHaye, who's written the Behind series, and talk about how apocalyptic sort of thinking is playing into shaping American international policy and shaping really dualistic thinking and opposition towards the UN.
Well, you know, usually when I think about the right wing or the Christian right and the phrase the UN pops into my head, I usually see in my mind's eye a rusted out Chevy pickup truck with a bumper sticker on the back that says, "Get us out of the UN." Oddly enough, though, you make very plain in your book the fact that the UN is being used to advance the what I call the religion industry rights agenda. Most people would probably be surprised, don't you think, to know that there is a significant focus on the family liaison to the UN.
Well, that's what's so shocking, and I think, even when I interviewed the focus on the family staff person for this, he pointed out that a lot of his constituency would be a bit nervous about the work that they're doing at the UN. They're using a Trojan horse strategy. Even though they don't always support the UN, its very existence, they're working within the UN now to undermine the system and to undermine progressive causes. So I was very shocked, especially in the year 2000, when they entered full force into the women's rights arena and tried to undermine what was happening there and were fairly successful. I was really shocked to see their presence there. I'd seen them in other arenas in the United States undermining the Presbyterian Church, progressive causes, and undermining school boards and such, but it was very shocking to see them at the United Nations.
Well, how do they...
Also operating in countries around the world, Mexico, Sweden, Australia.
How is it that they undermine... I mean, what kind of... Can you describe for the audience, please, and for me as well, what kind of tactics they use, and how do they are so alien to my way of thinking. How do they manage to have success?
Well, they really are pretty amazing, and I try to point out in the book that they have very strong organizing strategies that we can learn from. They stay focused on a few issues. They're very well coordinated. Initially, they came in and they would undermine. There are a lot of groups lobbying at the UN, a lot of activist groups, just like there are in Washington, D.C., and most of them very progressive. And so at this women's rights conference, they would organize by use of cell phone and flood activist organizing caucuses, take them over, issue statements on the floor to the world's governments that weren't really representative of the entire NGO community. And then the most important thing they did was organize a block of conservative religious countries that would support their point of view. And because the UN operates by consensus, a small block of countries that are very, very stubborn can actually undermine an entire negotiating process. So they would work with countries like the Sudan, which is, you know, pretty ironic. And on many levels, because the Christian right has been very angry at the Sudan, so they had some strange bedfellow alliances, but they'd work with Sudan and Libya and Iran, the Holy See, and now the U.S. with George W. Bush in office. They have the world's most powerful country in their pocket, and once George W. Bush came in, they were able to make a lot of headway at the U.N. In fact, when I interviewed Charlotte Bunch, one of the premier leaders in the women's rights movement, she said, "We're now treading water. We're not able to move forward with the movement as in the direction that we were going in."
And by women's rights worldwide, it's one thing, to Reverend Butler, to talk about the women's rights movement in the United States, where you talk about things like pay equity and control of one's own reproductive functions. But when we talk about women's rights on a global basis, we're talking about developing country where it's a right not to have a knife taken to your genitals when you're 13. And these people are actively opposing that stuff.
Exactly. Well, and especially with the global AIDS pandemic and an era where we cannot be afforded not to be educated about reproductive health and not to have reproductive health services. The Christian right was undermining reproductive health services for adolescents and for adults. And, you know, that leads to death of millions of people. They were advocating against the use of condoms and against sex education. And that really keeps the world from moving forward and addressing the AIDS pandemic.
Well, this whole situation makes for very strange bedfellows, because on the one hand, your average religion industry Protestant right winger can frequently be heard, when they think no one else is listening, talking about how the Catholics are a bunch of Mary worshipers and idol worshipers,
yeah,
and you know, that kind of stuff. But by golly, they go hand in glove when it's time to go off to Africa and tell people that they can't use a prophylactic that can keep them from dying. What does it take? I know you're trying to motivate people with faith in public life, that kind of thing. What does it take to oppose what I consider to be among the most dangerous things that are taking place on the planet today?
Yeah, I think there are several things that need to happen. One, what we're doing at Faith in Public Life is making sure that progressive people of faith are better organized and more sophisticated in the use of media so that they can influence culture and influence people's perspectives. What's happened is the Christian right has made a strong alliance with other partners on the new right, and they've received a lot of money and a lot of technical support, a lot of PR support to get their message out and to attract followers. And the progressive side hasn't been as sophisticated in terms of its organizing, and so we're trying to strengthen that and give grassroots voices, faith leaders who are doing incredible work around the world and in this country, make sure that they have a megaphone so that they can be heard and shape public debate.
Well, let me ask, I can just about guess. You were talking about how well-funded the religion industry right has been. You'll notice I won't call them Christians, Reverend Butler. I can't. I simply cannot. But they've been well-funded by the right wing. Let me guess, when progressive people of faith go looking for liberal support for their issues and their outreach efforts, it's like pulling teeth out of a hen, isn't it?
You said it, not me.
Well, I know, but no.
But you're right. And, you know, I'll say it, too. It's one of the cases I make in the book is that the leaders on the left and those who sort of call the shots and who determine where how funding gets spent really need to engage people of faith. Otherwise, we're going to have a global culture war on our hands. I mean, if the Christian right can team up, they've got conservative evangelicals, Catholics, Muslims, Mormons all working together in a coalition to created a global divide between people in the global south who they claim to be more religious and more pro-family and what they call a secular global north or the west. We have a global culture war on our hands, and if progressives don't start reaching out to faith communities and also reclaiming family values, then we're going to lose the battle. We're not going to be able to win.
Have you been able to, or do you attempt to explain the importance of media activity to the progressive faith community? The right wing, for instance, I mean, you mentioned Dobson's organization in your book. They have gone around buying up low-power FM stations and have created an entire network that was never intended to function this way, that disseminates their twisted message. Are you able to explain, and I ask you this because I've got sort of a dog in this hunt, because we're constantly trying to explain to the progressives, to the left, how important it is that you enter into debates, things like talk radio, things like the media like radio. You know, they've had Jim and Tammy Baker, and they've had the Pat Roberts and Robert Tilton and Oral Roberts, and it goes on and on and on. They've got an infrastructure built, and we don't. How much of an effort is it for you to say, you know, look, we're getting, I mean, are you getting through to anybody?
We are, actually. Air America, for example, has started airing an excellent show with Welton Gaddy, who's the head of Interfaith Alliance, and also one with Dr. Jim Forbes, who is the pastor of Riverside Church. They both have their own shows now on Air America, and I encourage you all to listen to them. They're phenomenal leaders. We've also, at Faith in Public Life, been able to achieve over 300 media hits for the progressive faith movement. And we do that not just in national media, but in local and state media, which we know people often read more.
Are you able to get into denominations themselves, Reverend Butler?
We are. There are a lot of denominational leaders who are trying to use some of these new tactics. And it's hard in older organizations that tend to be more bureaucratic. And so often, you know, they find it, you know, easy to team up in coalitions like one we created in Ohio called We Believe. We didn't create them. They created themselves. But we came in and supported them and helped them, help give them a megaphone. And they were able to work outside some of the slower moving organizations to create a voice to counter a Christian right group in Ohio called Patriot Pastors. Now, every time they're in the news, Patriot Pastors is in the news, We Believe Ohio is in the news, offering a counter example of what faith is.
Is it proving successful?
It's been very successful. We think it's going to shift the values debate in Ohio. It's empowering people to speak out in new ways. They've got 300 interfaith, interracial, multiracial clergy organized across the state, and they're beginning to also work on get out the vote strategies and supporting the living wage ballot initiative.
Reverend Butler, what about the so-called wedge issues? How does the progressive religious community, or not even that, the faith community, I like that word better, how do they respond, or how should they respond, in your opinion, on a global basis to issues such as marriage among same-sex couples, or adoption among same-sex couples, or even something as radically simple as a non-literal interpretation of the Bible?
Yeah, those are very important issues. And what we're trying to encourage is for people to work on common ground issues and to build as broad-based a coalition as they can and work on what we call the bread and butter issues, the issues that people wake up facing every day of how they're going to feed their families and how they're going to educate their children. And all issues are important. We just worked with a group, for example, in one city, is a very interfaith group that was wanted to come together over progressive values, but was really challenged because they had about five issues that were splitting them as a community, even though they agreed on economic justice issues and civil rights issues. And so what we worked on with them was we looked at each of the wedge issues, and we pointed out that even though they disagree on some aspects of them, like, say, gay marriage, there are many things within that issue that they did agree on. They agreed on opposing bigotry. They agreed on using gay marriage as a wedge issue and as a political tool to divide the state. And so they were actually able to come together through that exercise and realize we can't agree on everything right now, but we can agree on these things, and these issues are so desperate that we're going to unite over these. And we will say to the media if we have to, well, we don't agree on this and we don't agree on that, but here's where we do agree, and we want both candidates, both parties, speaking to issues that affect people's survival.
Well, what we're dealing with here is fundamentally, oh, I hate that word, a politicization of religion. Is that an unavoidable circumstance in this particular debate?
I don't think it's unavoidable. I mean, I think what I have admired so much about the people we work with is they're very concerned about their faith being co-opted by political parties. And they're very adamant that they will not sell out to a particular political party, and they have critiques to level at both parties. So I think, you know, for progressive and moderate people of faith, what this is about is preserving their identity, preserving their faith, as well as preserving the sacredness of their country and their government and the importance of their government.
What happens, do you think, based on your observations at the UN, if these right wing proselytizers or the activists, what happens to the world if they get their way? What does that world look like?
The world will be taken backwards. The world has made incredible strides in the past decade on respecting women's rights. I was amazed at the UN to see how often women's rights entered issues of peace and security, entered development when women used to not be thought of at all. You know, just a decade prior. So I think the world will move backwards in that area and the protection for human rights, and we see this on the torture issues and the U.S. practicing torture. I think the world will move more and more away from democracy and human rights. The world will continue to grow more polarized and destabilized, as we see it becoming in the past year. like a powder keg right now.
Can you see, I mean, can you foresee a theocratic America if these people get their way?
I think the theocratic types are actually a smaller percentage. I think what's more dangerous to American democracy right now is the fact that we are so polarized and that we can't talk about across the aisle to one another. That faith is becoming so identified with a particular political party, we simply can't talk to one another and actually propose real solutions to real problems. It's all ideology. That's what's shutting down American democracy.
I think there's a great element of truth in what you say, but from my standpoint, I have to ask, is that inability to dialogue our fault? I mean, these are the people who have called us un-American, un-Christian, heathen, Satanists, devil worshippers, all of these things. We didn't start, Reverend Butler.
I think it's important to note that the people who say those things are often the more extremist leaders, the Christian right leaders of the network. The people who listen to the radio stations and receive their publications, I find those folks to be winnable and to be convincible and to want to enter into dialogue. I grew up in Atlanta, and I had many conservative family members and friends, and that's my touchstone. When I go home, I enter into conversations and debate and back and forth with them, and I find that when they have the facts, they are willing to change their mind.
What kind of facts do you work toward?
Well, when I was working at the UN, for example, one Christmas I went home and was talking to a neighbor about the UN conference on children's rights, and she had heard, that the UN was trying to take children out of people's homes and trying to control how parents raise their children and trying to impose sex education on their children. And so I explained the facts behind what was actually happening. And she said to me, well, why would Dobson tell me that? So I had to sort of go back and explain, the political situation. And it caused her to really question his authority on those issues.
Well, I applaud you for being able to engage in that kind of dialogue. I think it is valuable in this nation. What about, are you familiar with this documentary that has come out recently called Jesus Camp? Have you heard about this, Reverend Butler?
Yeah, I have. I've seen a preview for that.
Does that give you any kind of the cold sweats?
Well, I think what's important to realize about that is that the Christian right is, and conservatives in general, have been very good at reaching out to youth and training youth and young people. And until recently, progressives hadn't taken that on at all. The progressive leadership is still dominated by people who emerged from the 60s and 70s. And, that's great. They have a lot of wisdom, but they need to nurture a new generation of activists. And until recently, now we have Center for American Progress and People for the American Way have worked on young programs to train young leaders. But you haven't seen that until very recently. We're way behind the Christian right on that, and it's very disturbing.
Well, how long do you think it will take for us to draw even on this side?
Well,
with their media outreach, the general reach of their message.
Well, with the right, realization and with will on the side of those who sort of make those decisions on the progressive side, I think we could retake things very quickly. I am sort of disheartened that after the 2004 elections, people were moving in a direction of recognizing the importance of organizing in religious communities. And there has been progress there, but not as quick as we had hoped. And so I think we're going to need to pick up the pace.
Is there any risk? What we're dealing with in a lot of these instances are 501c3 charitable organizations. Is there any risk? I mean, the Episcopal Church out in Southern California that has been attacked because of the sermon that was delivered that didn't endorse a candidate, and yet Dobson's not being investigated, D. James Kennedy's not being investigated, Pat Robertson's not being investigated, Falwell's not being investigated, but an Episcopal priest who says that war is wrong in Southern California has the full force and weight of the IRS down on top of him. Are you looking for any kind of negative pressure coming from the Bush administration as these charitable groups begin to fight back?
We are keeping an eye on that. There's no clear evidence yet. I mean, definitely the Pasadena case is out of the ordinary. And we're close partners with them. We talk to them frequently, and so we are keeping an eye on those things. Our job right now is to make sure that the growing progressive faith voice that is really finding its grounding and becoming more courageous, that that doesn't get dampened or fearful as a result of these kinds of cases. And so part of what we do is make sure people understand the law and that they operate within the bounds, but that they also feel more courageous in speaking out.
Now, one of the things that you speak to is our ability to change our message, because the right-wingers inflame people's passions. Mm-hmm. You know, the UN is going to tell you you can't spank your children, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You know, outright lies in some instances. What about the message coming from our side? I've heard it said that, you know, they do bumper stickers and we do paragraphs. Are you working on teaching or do you touch on any of this in the book as far as distilling the message, as it were?
I do. In my final chapter of the book, I express my ulterior reason for writing a book about the Christian right. It was really to talk to progressives about how we need to organize differently. And this is one of the things that I point out, is that progressives speak often to people's intellects, and we present the case and the evidence in an intellectual sense, but we don't do a good job of speaking to people's hearts and passions and in sound bites that they can catch in a modern era. So at Faith and Public Life, a lot of what we work on with groups is messaging, getting them to fine-tune their message, training them to speak to media, fine-tuning their press releases, and pumping them out. It's a very competitive media environment, and so groups really need help figuring out how to translate their lofty theological visions that are beautiful and that work out great in a 20-minute sermon, but don't do great in a 30-second soundbite. So we've had a lot of success working with groups on that.
Well, I wish you the very best. Now, the book comes out, Born Again, The Christian Right Globalized.
It's actually already out.
Oh, it is already out?
Online, or get it in a bookstore. And be sure also to visit Faith in Public Life's website at faithinpubliclife.org.
Okay, wonderful. I was under the misapprehension that it wasn't formally out until October. But folks can go to Powell's, Amazon, the places like Barnes & Noble, Borders.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's already available.
Myself, and it should be on there. And they got it out faster than they thought they were going to be able to. So it just came out last week.
Well, I'm so glad that I was able to invite you onto the program and that I was able to hear about the book, because this kind of information has got to become available in the progressive community, or we're in real trouble, I fear. And so I wish you the very best, both with the book and with Faith in Public Life. And if we hear, you know, we're proud to say now that the Head On Radio Network is America's liberal voice. And if we can ever be of any help, please feel free to call on us. We consider ourselves a resource. We're not operating from the traditional business model.
Marvelous. Thank you so much for having me on.
Reverend Butler, it was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care. 2 minutes before the hour. If you want to look at where the religious right is going, and you want to talk about an unholy alliance, Wahhabist Islam, you know, the really weird, weird, sick, twisted version of Islam that, for instance, Osama bin Laden is into, they're hand in hand with James Dobson, who's hand in hand with the sacred underwear crowd in the Mormon church. I mean, woof. I mean, this is like, it's almost, I mean, it's on a par in my mind with bestiality, okay? It's that sick. But they aim to rule the world. Now, what you aim to do about it is your business. The book, again, is Born Again, The Christian Right Globalized, by the Reverend Jennifer S. Butler. I highly recommend it to you. It's time for our top of the hour news. Let's discuss this a little bit, or anything else if you want to, after the news. Then the phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Or we can do it via email at bob@headonradio.com. Or you can do it in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Don't we make it easy? Yes, we do. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Defense Department has been court-ordered to turn over documents about mistreatment or disciplinary action taken against terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. The Associated Press requested those documents, saying their release serves the public's right to know. The government has 2 months to appeal the ruling. Next week, the International Committee of the Red Cross will visit Guantanamo Bay. Members will visit the 14 prisoners who were recently transferred there from secret CIA prisons. In Washington today, a federal judge reinstated a ban on road construction in nearly 60 million acres of national forest. The judge issued that ruling after finding the Bush administration failed to conduct studies to help determine the environmental impact of the development. California, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington, plus various environmental groups, sued over the changes. On Capitol Hill, the House Judiciary Committee has voted to endorse President Bush's plan for tough interrogation techniques and trials of terror suspects. The White House is still trying to work out a compromise on the bill, since many in the Senate oppose its current form. Also on Capitol Hill, the House voted to require Americans to show a photo ID in order to vote. The sponsors of the bill say it's a common-sense way to stop fraud at the polls. If signed into law, anyone who wants to vote in the 2008 federal elections would have to present a photo ID. A top U.S. military spokesman says American troops are being attacked more and more frequently, mostly in roadside bombings and suicide car bombings. Earlier this month, al-Qaeda in Iraq called for its followers to target American forces. More violence is expected with the start of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan on Sunday. At the Pentagon, NATO's top military commander in Afghanistan reports at least 1,000 Taliban fighters have been killed in Operation Medusa. The offensive ended last weekend as the Taliban retreated, but he also said the drug trade, which provides funding for the insurgency, is increasing. In an interview today, President Bush told CNN's Wolf Blitzer that he would order military action in Pakistan if he received credible evidence that Osama bin Laden were in the country. That's despite Pakistan's ban on U.S. military activity. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now reports that 146 people in 23 states have been sickened by E. coli. One person has died, another 76 are hospitalized. Officials in New Mexico found the E. coli bacteria in an open package of Dole brand baby spinach. Health officials are still awaiting test results to find the source of the contamination. The space shuttle Atlantis has been cleared for landing tomorrow. NASA concluded that the space debris identified yesterday floating outside the spacecraft did not cause any damage. Boeing has been awarded a $2 billion federal contract to build high-tech equipment to combat illegal immigration along the U.S.-Mexico border. BP is investing $3 billion in its Indiana refinery. It'll produce 1.7 million more gallons of gas a day by the year 2011, when the project is set for completion. George Lucas has donated $175 million to his alma mater, USC. That's the largest donation in the school's history. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow up 72 points at 11,613. NASDAQ up 30 points at 2253. The S&P 500 up 7 points at 1325. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, there it is. You know things are getting desperate when Dear Leader goes out and starts talking to the Matt Lauers and Brian Williamses and the Wolf Blitzers of the world. What the... What is this? I mean, who's is anybody buying this anymore? There it is at the CNN website. Don't waste your breath. I'll take care of it for you. Don't give them the satisfaction. Headline, Bush would send troops to Pakistan for bin Laden. Yeah, he'd do that. He wouldn't. The only thing he sends for bin Laden is he sends out for Chinese carryout for bin Laden down in the Crawford Ranch. Come on, don't jerk my chain. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Susan in Oregon has been waiting for quite a while. Thank you for your patience, Susan. We appreciate it.
No problem, Bob. First of all, I'd like to disagree with Goodrib.
Okay.
The people who listen to these, like Dobbs and stuff like that, they're not necessarily teachable. I have to confess, I have several of these people in my family, and you're right, they're not Christians. I term them Jesus freaks.
See, I took the Jesus off of that because I have more response or more respect for the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter in sandals than no, they're just freaks.
Yeah, I already got that too. But I'm pagan, and so every time I see them, it's one long conversion attempt. And I've even had them go so far as to say, "Well, why don't you convert anyway and hedge your bets?"
Right. No, you do that. You do that.
You know.
Come here. Let's go out to the Oak Grove.
You know, it's like they have a quota or something. But, you know, they're definitely not teachable. You can hit them with facts all day long, and it makes no difference.
Well, the ones that are...
I even played the recording of Bush saying there was no connection with Saddam Hussein and 9/11, and they still don't believe it.
Have you found, do you have handy, and it's easy to find on a search, I don't have it saved, else I would send it to you directly. The next time you want to, you want to really get under their fingernails, play them the congressional testimony of Michael Scanlon, referring to them as the religious wackos. Now, this is the guy who was a partner of Jack Abramoff. And he said, anytime we want to do something, we'd just pick up the phone and call Ralph Reed, and he'd get his religious wackos all worked up, and they'd never even know what they were mad about.
That's just about it, too.
There has to be a level of confrontation here. Some of them, no. A lot of it has to do with how long they've been poisoned by this stuff. Among other things, the Southern Baptist Church is very disturbed, Susan, by the fact that studies are indicating that when kids leave high school and go off to college, that they never come back to the Southern Baptist Church again. And that has to do with the fact that, you know, people will not willingly come back to someone who's been lying and cheating on them.
Right. What gets me is the people I'm talking about, they were adults when they converted. And that just blows me away.
Susan, that's because they had something terrible happen in their life, and they had to subsume their own personal responsibility. Yeah. So therefore, you know, they turned it over to Jesus.
Yeah. Anyway, the main reason I called was because of the previous caller. And they mentioned these special birth certificates. Now, I don't know about you, but the first thing I thought of when he said, "Get these things early," was, oh, the Bushies are just standing up and cheering this dude. Anybody who goes in early or even lines up to get one has suckers stamped across his forehead.
Well,
there ain't no way. Okay, I'm applying for disability right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 57, so sooner or pretty soon it won't be too many years where I will be applying for Medicare.
Right. And miraculously, miraculously, you'll go from disabled to just old.
Yeah. I will not be getting that new birth certificate. I don't care if they say you've got to have it. I will say, up yours. You can have the one from the state of Idaho that they sent me, or I'll do without, and then I'll come and die on your doorstep and see how much publicity that gets you.
By God, I love your spirit, Susan. I do.
Because the next step is you meet some dude on the paper on the streets, and the first thing he says is papers, please.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
He went, please.
Your papers are not in order.
Yeah, and forget that.
No. But then where we wind up is the FEMA camps that are being built right now. And that's not paranoia. That's not conspiracy theory stuff. The government confesses that it has spent millions upon millions of dollars paying Halliburton to build these FEMA emergency camps.
Yeah, what I want to know is where is ELF when you need them?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody knows where these camps are. ELF would have a real easy time with it, going with a few firebombs, bam. And for the record, George, I'm not a member of ELF. I have never burned anything down in my life. But, oh, it would be nice to see the fires on television.
Oh, I know. You know, you make a very good point there, because I was thinking, and it ties into something else. You want to find out if what, this is a separate subject, but it's sort of the same thing. You want to find out if what the administration is advising that we be able to do to detainees, no, they're not political prisoners, they're not prisoners of war, they're detainees. If you want to find out how illegal it is what we want to do to them, there's one way to find out. And that is to publicly suggest that what is being done to the detainees be done to the President of the United States.
Or better yet, or another way, suggest we put his daughters in there.
Well, see, but the presidency is particularly protected under federal law.
Right.
You could not go out in public and say, this, I'm speaking theoretically, I'm not speaking actually.
Yes.
You could not go out in public and say that George Bush should be bound to a board and have his head stuck in water until he was about to drown and then be brought out, pumped out, and done, and have it done to him again 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 times.
Because then you'd find yourself talking to some great big dudes from the Secret Service.
Yeah, who talk into their cuffs. Right.
Uh-huh. And, you know, and one other thing that I picked up on the news. The House has passed this obscenity of a ID card in order to vote. I don't know about you, but where I came from, okay, not where I come from, but in the school I went to, that's known as a poll tax.
It is a poll tax, of course it is.
For that. And last I heard, that's a no-no.
Well, you know, the Missouri version of that law was struck down. The Georgia version took a whack. I'm not sure about the Florida version yet. But the thing is, with the federal version, they know that the fix is in, Susan, because ultimately it'll wind up in front of Scalia and Alito and Roberts and, you know, and Thomas.
And are the people in the streets?
Where are they? They're not in the streets, Susan. They're in front of the daggum television.
Well, maybe we ought to get in the streets, because if we don't start taking to the streets and start getting really, really nasty, we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble. We're in trouble now. But these people, you know, we help them. Well, hey, guys, if you need instructions, I know how to make a Molotov.
Ah! Susan, they're going to take me away. Don't you like your little radio show?
No, but they'll come after me. By the way.
Yeah, but they'll waterboard me to find out how to reach you.
Oh, go ahead and tell them. By the way, there's a Molotov cocktail. It's the kind you actually drink.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, this I got to hear then.
You didn't think I was going to tell you anything that was going to actually get you in trouble.
Listen, I've had people come on this show talking about the things they wanted to do to George Bush that just made my blood run cold, because I knew I'd never see Agnes again.
Hey, I got news for you. I would not do anything at all and if somebody shows up, I will give them the recipe.
I want the recipe.
I'll email it to you.
Well, okay. Good. Because, you know, a good drink recipe, those things, you know, something out of the ordinary, you know, something beyond the usual bourbon and soda, something, you know, a little bit.
It's called a Molotov cocktail. It is a legitimate drink.
You know, my favorite drink name is the Tequila Mockingbird.
Oh, I love it. What's in it?
I can't think of it offhand, but I'll find it.
The pun is incredible.
It's a real drink, a Tequila Mockingbird.
Yeah, but what we need to do is the best thing we can do is just revert to, hey, Americans are real good at passive-aggressive behavior. You don't need to take to the streets. You don't need to do anything. Just don't get those birth certificates, and they have to drop the program. They cannot fight the inertia of 250 million people.
It's getting the 250 million together that's the problem. Because at least a third of those people are authoritarians, like we've discussed, as are described in John Dean's book.
People.
And if the right wing tells them, and if George Bush tells them to go out and set their hair on fire in order to get employment,
they'll do it.
And they'll do it for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Here, honey, you missed a bit in back. You know, let me get the kerosene out. Yeah, sure. Susan, I enjoyed our conversation. Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Bye now. I'll be looking for that recipe.
Oh, I'll send it to you.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.
Later. It's just a little more than a quarter past the hour. Let's take a quick break. Come back to more of your phone calls. I got a couple of lines open here. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Oh, no. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, one-third of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I thank you.
Love Supertramp. It's a Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. Although, if you are halfway across the world, it's a Thursday morning prayer meeting edition, and that's how it is for our good friend Angelica in Germany. Angelica, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
I have kept you up too late again.
No, I haven't listened to the last 15 minutes of the program. I talked to your lovely wife, and that was fine. That was nice. Anyway, I wanted to comment on something since we have prayer night tonight and religious night, right?
Right.
And I remembered when the PTL Club first came on. I don't know if that was first, but anyway, when I first watched it, I was so entertained. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, and I was glued to the TV every single night. And then other programs followed, you know, where people were speaking in tongues, and I just thought it was so funny.
Yes.
And then you have these preachers putting their hands on the TV, you know, and then begging for money. I can't believe this is happening. Ha, 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 you know.
Right.
And I, you know, back then.
And the next thing you know, they're running the world.
These weirdos sitting on TV with their bouffant hair and everything is just, ha, 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 you know, laughing your head off. But you know what? Now we are, what is it, 20 years later or 15, I don't know. We've got, had we known what was going to become of this so-called joke, the most threatening thing, you know, that's happening to this country, I think we would have stopped laughing a long time ago. At least I would have.
You're absolutely right. Some people tried, Angelica. Some people tried to warn America. Frank Zappa tried to warn America. Doggone it, People for the American Way. He created All in the Family. He tried. People.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the first speech and debate awards I ever won. I won for an extemporaneous speech called that I referred to as the Moral Majority Isn't.
Mm-hmm.
There are
that's
people.
What they were called, moral majority.
The moral majority,
uh-huh.
And that's a, you know, that's a
yeah.
forerunner to a lot of, and
that rings a bell. Yeah.
And they were so funny, and they were so over the top, and yeah, they had the goofy hair and laying on a hands and speaking in tongues and rolling on the floor and handling snakes and drinking poison.
On the floor with them laughing.
Yeah. It was almost impossible to take them seriously, but the thing that we neglected, we of any kind of respectable intellect,
mm-hmm.
was that there were people out there who were far weaker than we, who were so desperate for some kind of leadership, so desperate for something to hang on to, so desperate to believe in something besides an existential world that seldom makes a lot of sense, that suddenly a woman with bad hair and makeup can be your conduit to the divine.
Yeah.
And we missed the boat, Angelica.
Yeah,
we missed
did
it.
Because, you know, anybody with any kind of intellect just can't take that seriously. And while we didn't, they were down there, you know, like little ants organizing themselves and forming a web that you can't get out of, it seems.
Well, we are faced with a world that if we don't stop them, there is the potential in the religious right to make what happened in your country 70, 80 years ago look like a walk in the park.
Yeah.
Because they think that they have the religious authority to put anyone they want to the sword. And the first people they want to put the sword to are people like you and me.
Mm.
And getting people to understand that is very, very difficult.
You know, I lost a good friend. I didn't lose her. I just couldn't stand it, you know, because I didn't know she had become such a religious wacko. And I touched base with her again. I knew her from Texas and found her. And then she kept on writing me emails with all this, you know, his spelled capital, you know, and in God. And she wouldn't, and then I never did that. I was going to say, stop that. Don't you see? I don't do that, you know, stop that. And then she was just going on and on and sending me spring cards or whatever they're called.
Easter cards or
from the spring, those religious cards.
Oh, yes. Okay.
She wanted more than anything to convert me, I guess, but you know, I'm just wrong. I sent her this one article by the unfeeling president or the uncaring president. Who was that again?
Oh,
excellent article.
Oh, doggone! You've caught me out. I know exactly.
About,
I want to say Saul Bellow, but it wasn't Saul Bellow.
No.
Great author, though.
I'll
yes.
think of it. But anyway, I sent that to her, thinking, well, maybe it'll click or something. And I said, please read it, you know. And then she did, and then, yes, but, you know, George Bush is the president I voted for, and then she gave me this long religious sermon, and I says, I can't believe this. I just lost a friend. I can't deal with this, you know, and I never answered that, and she sent me a couple of other religious, I don't know, you know, how those chain letters, and says, I can't deal with that. I mean, so that was it.
Well, I don't, and it causes you a certain amount of grief yourself, but frankly, there was nothing left there.
Yeah.
Because you can't communicate with these people.
No, can't.
I applaud Reverend Butler's efforts, and I've been to the website. Faith in Public Life is an admirable group. But there is an element of these people that you know, it's not that we can't, it's not that we're unwilling to talk to them. They don't want the dialogue. They don't want the night pulled back. They like to live in darkness, and they would curse a candle. They like where they are because they don't have to think. All they have to do is follow.
Exactly.
And it's a part of the authoritarian mindset. And in this country, it is our national shame because it's a confession that Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, all of those guys were dead wrong.
You know, we're all Catholic in my family, mother and father, and none of them went to church. And my grandmother always said, you know, if I want to talk to God, I can do it in bed. And that was her philosophy, you know, and I was never, my parents used to say, well, why don't you go to church once, you know, it'll do you good. I said, I don't feel like it. And that was it, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And so I went to communion and all that, and my mother got sick from the incense. That was the last time she went in there, but she was always a Catholic. But she maintained, says, you know, I don't believe. She says, I think, and that was always her motto. You could not, you know, convert her with any of that mental trash. You know, she was just too level-headed for that.
Well, you know, that's the process of an inquiring mind and an inquiring culture, because you don't find that a lot in other areas. You're fortunate, frankly. You know, I'm all for anybody believing what they want to believe, Angelica. It's a matter of personal conscience. It's a matter of personal right.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the point of someone else telling me what I have to participate in, how I have to think, what I have to believe, the surefire way of pushing me away from anything is to try to push me toward it. I'm kind of mulish that way.
Well, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, those were my observations for tonight.
Well, I appreciate it. And your voice is sounding better. Are you getting some better?
I'm starting to feel a little better, yeah. So we'll see, maybe.
Well, you know, if you got some sleep.
No, I haven't. It was 5 o'clock this morning, to my shame, until I finally turned the light on. I should have just kept the light on. But that was horrible.
Oh, I know.
You know.
Well, it's going
to... you know, I'm going to sign off tonight, I think, after the phone.
Nah, you keep saying that. Angelica, have a wonderful good evening.
Or something, too.
All right.
Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Angelica in Germany. Agnes is giving me the wait sign. Let's go to our good friend Luke, calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program. I'm about half-addled, I'm afraid.
Just half? Oh, well.
Well, you know, I mean, we're only halfway through the program. What do you want?
That's true. It's halfway through the week, too. So you got to save a little for the end of the week.
Yeah, I got to be full-on addled by Friday.
Yeah. Okay, couple things on some stuff I sent. Well, how did you enjoy the stuff about the trophy system? it's like they were like, well, we can't get this. It's only 90% effective. It's like, well, what we have now is nothing. So I'll take 90%. I'll take 9%. You know, if I'm riding around one of them damn Humvees, I'll take anything.
Oh, and it's just pathetic.
You know what I mean? They were saying, you know, we've tested it. It's 95% effective. It's like, I'll take it. Take it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where you become one of those 5%ers.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things. I know, most Democrats won't get near a camera, so they'll turn it off the second they do. But you know, everybody, all the Democrats in Congress ought to be waving this, going, "Look, we want to protect the troops. The Bush administration won't do it."
Well, that requires fighting, Luke.
I know.
And I want to be fair. There are a few fighters out there. John Conyers is a fighter. Charlie Rangel's a fighter. Dennis Kucinich is a fighter. By and large, most of the makeup of the Congressional Black Caucus are fighters.
A lot of it's like I was sitting and watching something the other night, and then as I call it, the Casablanca guest came on. You know, you round up the usual suspects. You know, it's one of those things where, oh, we want to talk to some Democrats. Well, yeah, let's bring in, let's see who we get. Of course, we have to start with our favorite Snow White senator. and you know what I mean? And then like, oh, yeah, we're going to get a columnist. Yeah, bring in Eugene Robinson. Oh, yeah, he's a real liberal. Oh, God, it's like, you know, it's like I was sitting there the other day, and, you know, they had that thing where they showed David Obey. And it's like, damn, but we're going to get to hear from him. And the one I was watching, they just showed him. They wouldn't take the sound.
Well, see, and you don't even get to see a picture of Russ Feingold anymore.
Well, you know, I was over on the span a little while ago, and I saw Mr. Nadler. You know, I mean, he's somebody who makes a lot of sense when you listen to him. You know, it's like, of course, we can't have him on TV. Damn,
people. No.
You think? You know, or it was like somebody was talking the other night on Oberlin was saying, you know, what's one of the main things that will happen if the Democrats take over? They said, well, the first thing that happens is Henry Waxman gets to subpoena people.
Oh, I love that idea.
And said people are scared of that because he don't give up.
Well, even Murtha, yeah. There, you know, the networks are trying. You know, do we have to have him on this week?
Well, I tell you the one though who always annoys me worse than anybody. Because of course the reason that we'll have him on, won't have him on is because they ripped him apart so bad is McDermott. You remember McDermott
from
Washington a few years ago who said George Bush would tell any story it takes to get us into Iraq.
Well, he wandered down to Camp Democracy and had a little chat.
But you know what I mean? Remember 3 or 4 years ago, they called him every name they could think of.
Sure they did.
And it turns out he was telling the truth 100% of the time. And, of course, if he went on TV, some of these people on TV would have to eat a lot of crow.
An apology has not been forthcoming.
I know. But, you know, it's one of those things. The one I've been enjoying, well, not enjoying, but the one that's absolutely just, I guess maybe kind of sticks the shiv in you, is hearing all these people on the news that are like, well, we didn't realize, you know, people were so, you know, this thing about going into Iraq that people were so upset. It's like, let's see now. If we go back to 2003, did anybody have those Donahue tapes we can run? You know, because they keep saying nobody at all was saying anything about it. It's like, oh, they were saying you all just weren't letting them talk.
Well, sure, and well, you know, let's go back to the clip where Falafel Man says, if the Bush administration doesn't find the weapons of mass destruction, I will never believe another word they say. That's gone down the memory hole, too.
I was going to say, that got shredded. Got that shred machine on. Come on, give me more tape. I've got to run the tapes through here. We can't have those things left. Well, of course, you know how it is. The boys over at FCC are taking up all the shredding machines right now.
Yeah, shredding. The second report. I wonder how many reports it turns out there are proving that centralized media ownership is bad for America.
Well, you know, it's like say, oh, yeah, well, it was this one report. Well, here's the second report.
Well, I love what happened. You know, they go to Michael Powell and they say, well, what about these reports, Mr. Powell? You know, I'm not at the FCC anymore. I have no idea what's going on over there. So they go to the new chairman. Oh, what's his name? I can't remember. Martin. And they say, well, what about these shredded reports? Well, you know, I wasn't chairman when those things were done. I know nothing.
Yeah, he's on the board.
I was there. I mean, I was in the restroom when that was discussed. I know nothing. This is the Sergeant Schultz government, Luke. Well, I know nothing.
Well, you've been watching this today. They've been talking about Chavez, you know, being at the UN. And I was sitting here when I came in and turned on the TV. I was watching a little bit while I was, getting my stuff together. And I was sitting here going, and I listened off and on, switched back and forth a little bit between the channels. And, to this day, I've heard them all complain about Chavez. You know, I haven't heard one of them talk about the fact that, maybe he doesn't like George Bush because of that dang little old coup thing.
You tried to kill me.
Tried to take me out of power in my country where I was elected by the people, not selected by a court.
But, I think he probably, I'm guessing he's got a sense of humor.
Well, it's one of those things. Him and Adina John have just got to be sitting there going, we get to go up there and wave at the UN, get our picture took. George's got to be on a nice slow burn.
But see, the thing they don't understand is the way that media responds. I saw a perfect example. I was in the living room with my dad for a few minutes, and he was doing some surfing, and he stopped on Fox just because it's like a car wreck, And there, lo and behold, it was. This is what I heard, Luke. This is what I heard. In California, liberals wear their politics proudly on their sleeve. Why then is it that Phil Angelides is having such a hard time garnering support? What in the world was that? I looked at Dad and I said, did you just hear what I heard? And he said, yeah, my hearing's shot and I heard it. In California, they wear their liberalism on their sleeve like they're proud of it or something. What's wrong with those sick little communists?
Oh, God.
But see, this stuff runs through the media, Luke. For instance, Katie Couric. Describing free speech in America and describing her stupid little segment, she said, free speech is a privilege we have here in America.
See, I thought it was a riot.
That's where I went, too.
I seem to remember number one, I think, on the list. It's that first one they come to.
It's a civil privilege. Yeah, it's a civil privilege, Katie. Poor Walter Cronkite. He's just going to get in a sailboat and sail off into the sunset one of these days because it's going to be too much shame for him to bear.
I figure he's just going to take the shovel and go out there to Murrow's grave to say, move over.
Yeah.
I want to come on down to save time. I'm
Ed, if we knew this was what it was going to lead to, why didn't we? We could have been cab drivers.
Been much happier. It's one of those things, stupid guy, it's like. Sometimes this stuff, you're just kind of, your mind just kind of goes. The one I got today, I think I sent you was this thing. Is that, isn't it? I thought that the first lady wasn't supposed to, in a good presidency, the first lady wasn't supposed to give her opinion.
No, she's supposed to stay home and shut up.
So what's Pickles out doing? Did somebody slipped her leash? What?
There's a corollary to that rule, Luke. The first lady shall keep her mouth shut unless, of course, she is liked better than the president, in which case she can go out and attempt to bolster his pathetic ratings.
It's one of those things you just want to say, well, wait a minute, but I thought this was a crime for a first lady to go out and speak, without having a couple of handlers along with her just to make sure that she doesn't speak about anything other than fashion, perhaps. you know, it's one of those things. It's like sometimes you're just sitting there going, you know, do as, you know, like I say, the Republicans' main rule is do as I say, not as I do. You know.
I know. And of course, yesterday I got another email from another listener who couldn't help noticing, and it was a photograph of Laura Picklesbush right next door, set right next to Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Yeah, separated at birth.
Well, no, not separated at birth. I think she's the love child of the Joker and Martha Ray.
That's an evil thing to say about Martha Ray.
Yeah, it is an evil. That's you're darn right. Hey, Luke, thanks so much, man.
One other quick one.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, shoot. Try to bring it up, and of course your mind shuts. Totally.
See what I did?
You do it. One of the emails I sent you. God, yeah. Oh, the Corker thing.
Yeah. Oh well. Yeah. It's nice to see him coming unglued.
Well, that's okay. I don't think it mentions in the article about the thing a couple of weeks ago. And oh, by the way, one of his building companies. Well, somebody that works for them hired these guys that apparently don't live in the country. You know. And
yeah, this is the Tennessee Senate race between Harold Ford Jr. and Bob Corker, who is, you know, I remember when that was a euphemism in American English. Oh, he's a real Corker, he is.
Well, I love the one now they're trying to say, well, Ford's the most liberal Democrat there is. It's like, look, Harold Ford's a lot of things. Liberal is not one of your...
Yeah, Harold Ford would send me to Guantanamo, okay? I mean, I will stand up and acknowledge the liberals, and I'll tell you who they are. Harold Ford ain't one of them. But he's a darn sight better than Corker or the cat killer. You know, the one nice thing, there's a Jerry Clower aspect to Tennessee politics right now, Luke, and that is that some poor bastard's going to get some relief because Bill Frist is not going to be in the Senate in January of 2007.
I'm waiting for somebody to go up there when he starts to say about this filibuster going, Mr. Corker, can't we have that up and down vote yet? You know, that one you all said was so important? Can't we have that yet?
Nope, sorry. No. Only under certain circumstances.
When it's not us doing it. All right, I'll let you go. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I always enjoy it, Luke. Take
Bye.
Care. Bye now. Listen, let's take a quick break. We're late. We're late for our workers' independent news, doggone it. You see what you do to me? But we'll come back with more of your phone calls, 877-443-2366. Line up. It's Wednesday. Get it out of your system. We're purging the demons here in the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I'm Brother Bob Kincaid.
The rope that's wrapped around me is cutting through my skin, and the doubts that I've surrounded me are finding their way in. I keep it close to me like a holy man prays in my desperate. Better that way. So I'll come by and see you again. I'll be such a very good friend. Have mercy on my soul. I will never let you know where my mind has been.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Election season is in full swing, and groups vested in the outcome of races throughout the country are mobilizing funds and supporters. Organized labor is promising one of the bigger voter turnouts. Doug Cunningham has more.
AFL-CIO Political Director Karen Ackerman says the Labor Federation is not only spending a record $40 million on voter turnout in the midterm elections in November, but it has developed a state-of-the-art program that will eclipse all other get-out-the-vote efforts this year.
We will be the single biggest turnout program of anyone in this country. Our program reaches 12.4 million union voters in 21 top-tier states.
Ackerman says the AFL-CIO has developed new voter targeting techniques and is also using permanent mobilization to reach union voters on the job, in their neighborhoods, and on the Internet. It's a massive effort, Ackerman says, to create a working family-friendly Congress.
The failures of the Bush administration and the Republican-controlled Congress on jobs, on health care, on energy, on tax breaks for the wealthy, on the shift of wealth in this country from working and middle-income people to the wealthiest citizens in our country. These issues will motivate members to vote.
Two former shop stewards who were responsible for last year's two-day illegal strike against British Airways are to receive hush money from the Transport and General Workers Union. According to the UK paper The Guardian, the stewards will receive payments worth the equivalent of $1.1 million. It has been alleged that the two stewards were following orders from the union in launching the Wildcat strike. The men and the union could be sued by the airline if involvement were to be found. The two men have been told by lawyers that they could sue the union for ordering them to take the action, as well as a breach of contract or psychiatric injury from being fired by the airline. Last week, the men signed a confidentiality agreement with the union for which they will receive the $1 million payment. The action against British Airways was the result of in-flight meal supplier Gate Gourmet threatening to fire 667 workers. The result was a compromise. The workers received enhanced redundancy payments. British Airways said the strike cost the company the equivalent of more than $79 million. Here is today's economic report. If you are poor in New York City but strive to make healthy choices, you could be soon seeing a tax break. The proposal from Mayor Michael Bloomberg is one of a series of potential plans developed by the city's Anti-Poverty Commission. The report is intended to help find ways to help lift the 1.5 million poor escape the cycle of poverty. The thought is that if a poor person gets regular checkups or stays in school, they should be rewarded. Studies show that poor get stuck when they skip doctor visits and end up missing work days or losing jobs.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Where? Here. That's right. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Let's go straight to the phones. Wayne joins us. Welcome to the program, Wayne. How you doing?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing real good. Listen, seeing that it's prayer meeting night and your brother, Bob.
That's right.
I got a lot of questions.
Oh, no.
Okay, Bob. I know you can answer them.
I will consult the crystal ball.
Okay. I mean, you know I'm not a very religious man, but, you know.
More than you know, I think, personally. But
that, yeah. I found out a lot of them said, do unto others as, you know, somewhere they got that rule. And I said, okay, that'll be my religion. And
yeah, and that's a good,
that,
you know,
at a very young age, and you know, I really haven't paid much attention since.
Yeah, that's a good starting place, and for the fact of the matter is, a good stopping place too.
Okay, but here's what I remember, and you got to tell me, you know, if it's true or not.
Okay.
Somewhere along the line, I don't know if it was before he was tortured, after he was tortured, or I don't know if it ever happened. Doesn't the Bible say somewhere Jesus Christ said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do?
Yeah, that's right about the time that he quit the party.
Okay. Now, I think that what happened to the gentleman, I mean, even in the Attorney General, Gonzalez,
yeah,
his definition, that would be torture, because the way the story goes, it did in fact cause organ failure and death.
That is true.
I don't know. Would that be double torture? I don't know.
Well, no, I think it's just really good torture from the viewpoint of one Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, when all of our Christian church going, I think they should remember that. They tortured that man. And now the President of the United States, who so many of you back and support because he's such a godly man, is asking the Congress of the United States to lawfully allow him to do what was done to Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's a great way of looking at it.
Well, that's the way I look at it.
Well, but the thing is, You've got to, again, you've got to get over that mindset, Wayne, that these people have, that it's not really torture. You know, they don't want to do torture on anybody. They don't want to torture anybody. They just want to use coercive means to gain information, and that's not torture.
The facts are out there. They have already tortured.
Yeah, well, the facts.
Their secret prison.
Yeah, the facts that were determined by the Canadian government, for heaven's sakes,
yes,
about what was done to that gentleman. You know, and we had it done. That, you know, granted, we subcontracted the work
to Syria.
Our buddies.
Yeah.
That mostly we want to kill.
Right.
But
well,
when it comes
in handy every now.
Yeah, but when it comes to putting a guy in a hole that's 3 feet by 7 by 6.
Yes.
You know, you really can't beat the Syrians, and we are oriented toward excellence and quality. You wouldn't want to have any half-assed torture out there, Wayne. You know, it's because, you know, if you're torturing people, you want people to know that they're getting quality torture.
This debate is.
It's crazy.
Isn't it? It's sickening.
It's
sickening that the United States of America has reached a point where this is even a viable debate.
Yeah, why? Yeah, like there's a. I know exactly what you're saying, and I'm having a hard time agreeing with you because you're saying it so well.
Well,
how is it that we have come in 2006 to being to actually having a real debate in the United States of America that has an Eighth Amendment in its Constitution that says there shall be no cruel or unusual punishment? And we're trying to decide whether or not half drowning somebody time after time after time after time after time. Is there really a legitimate debate in this country as to whether or not that's cruel or unusual? I'm down. That's cruel. Is there anybody on the other side, Wayne, that wants to say that doing that is not cruel? Never mind whether.
I don't know. How can you support such a thing and call yourself a Christian?
Well, here's.
Or a God-fearing man or. Or, you know, what's the stupid guy referred to? Oh, he's such a godly man.
Yeah.
He just went before the Congress and asked for, please let me torture people.
Right. As long as they're not American citizens.
Huh?
See, as long as they're not American citizens, Wayne, because there's the lynchpin.
Yeah, well, that would go away real quick. You know, oh, God.
You ever had dealings with anybody you think would like to torture you if they got a half a chance, Wayne?
You know, I'm an old guy, man. I grew up with a lot. When I was a young kid, I was surrounded by World War II vets, and a guy named Tommy Carball lived right next to me,
mm-hmm.
and he was in a concentration camp. And he told some stories, especially if you could get a few beers down, man, he'd loosen up, and. The conditions that those people were put under and the things that happened to them were atrocious. I mean, he described scenes where a guy died and then there was a big fist fight for who got his boots. And I thought about those things, and he told me some of the things that happened to me, and I always swore that, I just can't understand the mentality of torturing another human being. Now, I could kill another human being. I mean, in self-defense.
Defense of family.
If you're a defense of family, man, I'll kill you in a minute. But how anyone could torture another human being, I mean, that's a sick individual.
Well, see, they always...
If you got CIA...
Well, Wayne, they always...
...credentials or what?
No, they love to set up this straw man argument, though, and they say, well, we only want to torture people who might have... No, we only want to use coercive interrogational techniques on people who might have information that could save Americans. I mean, if we thought this person had a nuclear bomb and knew where it was planted and when it would go off in the United States, wouldn't you torture that person too to get the information out of them? And that's just dumb.
I know that's their argument. And Americans should say no to that because we are better than that.
Well, you know what you do with that guy? You know what you do with that guy? You get him a couple... Okay, this is a sexist moment on my part, and I apologize. You get him a couple of really good-looking hookers and as much liquor, cigars, cocaine, heroin, whatever he wants.
See, Bob, I agree with you 100%.
And in the middle of the party, you walk in and...
to the lady.
Yeah, but in the middle of the party, you walk in and go, oh, by the way, dude, where's the bomb? Oh, okay, wait a minute. Oh, it's in the basement.
There you go. You got it.
You know, you catch, you know, mama wasn't dumb. And she, you know, she said, you know, you're going to catch a whole lot more flies with honey than with vinegar.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, that's what the Republican policy and their, how they're going to win the war on terror. They are going to win it by being more ruthless, satanistic, more terroristic than the people that were supposedly trying to bring democracy.
And do you know where that theory came from, the idea of winning by imposing more horror, Wayne?
Peanut?
No.
No,
that's straight out of the Third Reich.
Oh, great.
Maximum horror. There's a word for it, and I can't remember it right now.
Oh, well, I bet
Shreklish something.
I bet you'll find it in the PNAC document.
Yeah, well, probably right up there, by right next to "We Need a New Pearl Harbor." Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it probably came right after that, and you know.
But the, you know, I whatever happened to American common sense, Wayne? You know, whatever there was an America that said things like you can catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. There was an America. There was an America that believed that. Well, I mean, look at here in West Virginia, the Greenbrier. We took prisoners of war and housed them at the Greenbrier.
There you go.
And they sang like birds.
Yes.
What's to keep secrets when you're getting treated like that? The so-called Islamic terrorists, who needs 72 virgins when we'll bring them to you on Earth?
Exactly.
And you don't have to die first.
You can't. You don't force the American way. You show it.
Yeah.
You show it.
You know, don't bring the guns. Bring the butter.
I don't know. I know, I've been saying how nasty these people are going to get, and they're certainly firing up for it, but, you know, you got to be prepared for worse than this because, you know, in this bill that was passed today, the ID thing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, if they race it, you know, their goal is to race that through and make it effective next month.
Yeah, and what happens next, I guess, is maybe they embed those RFID chips, maybe they embed one of those in your old license tag.
Or your earlobe, you know.
Just like we had the vet do with Rover. Yeah, I know.
There you go. It's scary. But listen, on a happier note.
Okay.
I talked to Dr. Bill.
Yeah.
And he is going to accompany us to Charleston.
I think this is going to be so exciting.
Oh, I'm thrilled to death about this. I'm thrilled to death.
Because I want to help teach Democratic organizations what new media can do for them. And when the West Virginia Democratic Party can write off to the National Democratic National Committee and say, hey, look, we used new media to take our Jefferson Jackson Day message to the entire world.
The entire world. That's exactly.
We are a resource.
Yes, we are.
So it'll be you, me, Dr. Bill, Bruce. We're gonna have that dinner covered. Like a winter snowfall.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what now, and then the Bruce Birch producer, I guess, also official cameraman of the Head On Radio Network.
Yes.
Came home and said, well, I think I should be there to take pictures. I said, okay, we need a suit and tie.
But he might, I don't know, he might need to be here to produce programming.
Oh God! I never thought of that.
Because you know we're gonna be at
we're
this.
We're gonna have to clone them.
Yep, clone them. Get busy.
That's all there is to that.
All right.
Well, okay. Well, we'll talk about that.
All right, we'll figure it out.
Okay. You know, have a good evening, brother.
All right, you too. Thanks, Wayne.
Bye.
Later. We'll figure out. Well, this is so exciting watching people. You know, and it's you guys too. You know, you're out there. You're visiting blogs. You're blogging for the Horn. And you're doing it because you realize what we can do if we set our minds to it. We don't have to have major corporate support. This can be done on another model. Change may be effected. America may be saved. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the vehicle for that salvation. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Reality News Network. At the United Nations General Assembly today, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez called President Bush the devil, and that, quote, wherever he looks, he sees extremists, end quote. He also accused the U.S. of domination and exploitation. A top U.S. military spokesman says American troops are coming under attack more frequently. More violence is expected with the start of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan on Sunday. In Washington, the Defense Department has been court-ordered to release documents about actions taken against terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay. The Associated Press requested those documents, saying their release serves the public's right to know. The Associated Press also reports that newly released documents show that two Republican activists visited the White House more than 100 times between 2001 and 2006. On Capitol Hill, the House Judiciary Committee has endorsed President Bush's plan for tough interrogation techniques and trials of terror suspects. But the White House is working on a compromise since many in the Senate oppose the bill's current form. Also on Capitol Hill, the House voted to require Americans to show a photo ID in order to vote. If signed into law, it would apply to anyone voting in the 2008 federal elections. In Washington, a federal judge reinstated a ban on road construction in nearly 60 million acres of national forest. That ban was changed in 2005, but the judge ruled that the White House did not conduct the necessary studies to determine the environmental impact of the development. At the Pentagon, NATO's top military commander in Afghanistan reports at least 1,000 Taliban fighters have been killed in Operation Medusa, an offensive that ended last weekend. In Thailand, the country's king endorsed the army commander who seized power yesterday in a bloodless coup. He'll act as the interim prime minister and says elections will be held by next October. The U.S. and other Western nations are calling for quicker action. Women who use the birth control patch OrthoEvra instead of the pill are at greater risk of developing blood clots in their legs and lungs. That's according to the FDA, which posted the warning on its website today. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The state of California is suing six car makers, saying the greenhouse gases produced by their vehicles have damaged the state. The suit was filed by California Attorney General Bill Lockyer. The space shuttle Atlantis has been cleared for landing tomorrow after NASA concluded that the space debris found floating outside of the spacecraft yesterday did not cause any damage. Toyota has announced plans to sell nearly 10 million vehicles worldwide in 2008, which would overtake GM as the number one auto seller in the U.S. Last year, Toyota sold more than 8 million vehicles and expects to sell nearly 9 million this year. Software company Oracle reporting a higher-than-expected quarterly profit. That's largely due to growth in new business software licenses. News Corp chairman Rupert Murdoch planning to launch a Chinese version of the website MySpace. His Chinese-born wife will help with that launch. BP investing $3 billion in its Indiana refinery. It'll produce 1.7 million more gallons of gas a day by the year 2011. Federal Reserve met today. The board decided to leave the key interest rate at 5.25%. Light sweet crude settled today at $60.46 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow up 72 points, NASDAQ up 30, S&P 500 up 7 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5 minutes.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
We begin a third hour by going back to the phone. It's it's prayer meeting night, so there's a communion aspect to all of this. So we join our brother David in Middle Tennessee, somewhere near Sin City. Oh, this is David in Maine?
Yes, actually it's David in Maine.
Okay, but so Tennessee, you're not in Sin like City, nice Tennessee. Too. No, you're in Sin City, Maine.
Yeah, Sin City, Maine. Good save.
Thank you.
I have a nomination I have the winner for Hero of the Week, in my opinion.
Okay.
By this artist named Banksy. He's a guerrilla artist.
Mm-hmm.
He got in trouble recently for a bit of attention recently for doctoring Paris Hilton albums.
I remember. You told us about that.
He also changed the music to it. But the thing that he did this weekend, I think... should be noted in America, just this little thing that he did. He took a life-size mannequin and dressed him up like a Gitmo detainee and put him in Disneyland.
Oh my God!
How
did he get it into Disneyland?
I don't know. He's swift how he does it, and he put this whole statue in the Disneyland. But that's not all. He put it in one of the rides, Big Thunder Railroad, and they took pictures of it. And it was there for 90 minutes, and people didn't notice for 90 minutes. And then they said, wait a minute, there's a guy with a hood on his head.
Oh, that's beautiful.
If you see the picture.
Well, maybe somewhere along the way, before they took it down, took it out, a few people saw it and thought about it. You know, I love what the freeway blogger does.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. It's to be subversive for a minute and to get the media attention any way you see that you can express something that you feel is injustice or just in terms of art. It doesn't even have to be left or right. I mean, and the funny thing about it was I was reading some of the blogs about it, and I was like, man, some of these people are so dense because they object to it and they object to it, and yet they just keep talking about it. And I'm like, haven't you learned the lesson? No PR is bad PR.
No, yeah, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Yep.
Which leads me to segue beeline to Minister Chavez and Reverend Ahmadinejad, if for their religions at least. I think that what they said needed to be said. I was just skimming through. I read the Chavez, the whole speech. Thought it was pretty well together.
Well, yeah. His gripe about, well, he's got a gripe about the fact that the United States is trying to torpedo Venezuela's seat, you know, one of the rotating seats on the Security Council.
Right.
And because of that, he's kind of chapped. But I think he's also got a sense of humor.
Yeah, he does have a sense of humor.
And sometimes that doesn't come across very well when you're going from one language to another. But anybody who walks up and says, man, it smells like sulfur and brimstone in here. Huh? The devil must have been here. And everybody laughed because it was funny. But you know, we got no sense of humor in American media. And newscasts begin with, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez called George Bush the devil today.
Do you think that's similar to? Do you think it's a double standard though? Someone brought this up on right wing radio, and I thought about it for a second. But do you think it's a double standard that the left media went so hard after Bush for saying wanted dead or alive? And I thought about it for a minute, and see, this is my main point of it. I was like, you know, I wasn't really offended by it. I just thought it was theater. Basically, and I remember there was such a big deal about it, and I was like...
Well, yeah, because you've got Dear Leader walking out there, David, and he says, we got an old saying out in Texas. And the minute he says Texas, in everybody's brain all across the country, you hear that wah, 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 you know, from the Clint Eastwood, wanted dead or alive.
But do you think for someone calling the leader, I mean, I'll just put it to you another way. If Bush would have called somebody again, I'm going to play this the devil's advocate here. But if Bush came out and said another leader was the devil at the UN, I think a lot of the progressive, I think a lot of the left media like Huffington Post and everyone would be outraged. And what I'm just saying.
Well, no, we would be because George Bush has no sense of humor. He would admit it. He believes in devils. I don't believe in devils. I don't think.
I don't know. I think basically, but what it does is it just, when Chavez said that, he was heating up the rhetoric. Obviously, he wanted to get the word out on what he was trying to say, and it was a smart move. It was like forcing Bush's hand. Was see, what are you going to do now? What are you going to do next? That's basically what he was doing.
And there's an element of danger in that, David, because he's a psychotic.
Oh, that's true. And here's the interesting thing about that I found was interesting was that when he took out a. I don't know if I would say if he went too far on this or not, but when he highlighted an author, he's just asking for more demonization from Chomsky by holding up a. Did you see where he held up the Chomsky book?
Yeah, I did. I did.
Yeah. What did you think of that?
It's not gonna win him any favors with the American media. Because Chomsky,
I think it just gives more ammo.
He's a commie,
right? For the right to just put up a picture of Chomsky and the Chavez and the photoshops and all,
and hammer and sickle and be done with it.
Right, and constantly just they'll bring that out. And I just thought, probably Chavez doesn't realize that. Or maybe he does. He doesn't realize that in America, the propaganda that we use or the right uses is on such a subversive level that they take anything they can get at this point. Because pretty much they see everybody rising up against. I mean, the citizens and the people who don't pay attention. Of course, they're going to side with. Anything the president says, because that's the president, and you have to, obey, as they say. But to me, I just think that the whole rhetoric of the speech and everything, the bigger point was just to see what Bush's reaction was to it, and I don't know exactly. Maybe Chavez is worried that they're gonna. Attempt a coup in the future, near future.
Well, if his public pronouncements have been any indication, he believes that they'll try to because they've tried to kill him before.
I'll tell you the interesting thing about the speeches. The two leaders of Ahmadinejad's speech also was the fact that I don't know if you read or if you saw all of it, but he went into details on the nuclear programs. And a nuclear weaponry, and I thought that was interesting to just be able to lay out everything and what he believed in terms of nuclear technology. And it's almost like it takes out some of the wind out of the sails. Maybe not in America, but for the rest of the world, when they see that speech and when they see everything that he was saying, the fact that he was willing to go over here, he's like, well, I'm not the great Satan. Here I am at the UN to talk about what you guys want to hear about.
Well, and the other thing is, both Chavez and Ahmadinejad know that George Bush would not dare lift a finger against them in that circumstance. That's not to say that there's not a finger about to be lifted against Iran. We've got some audio here in a little bit that suggests profoundly otherwise. I keep saying it, and I don't know how seriously people take me, but it is getting uglier and uglier and uglier. And it's going to keep getting that way.
I think it's. I'm going to side with Jamal on this one. I think he's right. I think it's a Joker card, just to ratchet up votes. And I think true believers do have a problem with righteous and fundamentalists. But then they also have to look for their special interests. And if their special interests are calling on the phone and saying, you know what, I'm not liking that idea of an airstrike on Iran. I'm getting some bad vibes and feelings on that. They're gonna take that into serious consideration. I think that's what's happening.
Well,
I think part of the reason is because of the reaction that the rest of the world had when we got out sort of the grassroots campaign on it. I'd like to think that maybe that's how we swayed the balance on that one. By the same thing of calling wolf too many times, and the rest of the world is pretty much onto it right now, and they're already ahead. They're 10 steps ahead of the administration, and there's nothing really they can do to basically block the media around the world.
Well, no, they can't stop world media, but I think you might be a little overestimating, David. They don't give a damn what world media thinks. They don't give a damn what the world thinks.
And frankly, David,
bear in mind, George Bush will hang his supporters out to dry if he is given enough pressure to go and do what he's told. He'll hang everybody out to dry if Dick Cheney tells him it's the thing to do. It's true.
I beg to differ on that one, though, because I think that the thing is that you have to keep in mind with the special interest in the business partners.
But bear in mind, the business partners will only get richer, David, by an attack on Iran. The oil companies will get richer. The weapons suppliers will get richer. Just about the only real industry we have left in the United States is in defense contracting. GE, Northrop Grumman, McDonnell Douglas, whatever. All of those companies will, Halliburton, for Christ's sakes, will reap enormous profits from an air war against Iran. And see, that's how it's being sold right now. Now, don't worry, America. We're not going to send the Marines into Iran. We're only going to keep getting them killed in El Anbar province. We're just going to bomb them. It's going to be a big fireworks show. But it'll be incredibly expensive. And you watch. We go to war in Iran, the market will go up.
Well...
So will oil prices, but the market will rise.
I gotta agree with that one right there. I think that will be that's a definite. Market's going up during the times of war, but like I said, I think that the thing that people don't take into consideration is the world partners that we're partnered with.
Oh, they're just not going to have anything to do with it.
I think I'm telling you, I think it's a Joker card, and
well, it may be. I mean, I'm sitting here talking about it, but there's a...
See, Jamal brought an interesting point. He said he believed the same thing for, like, several months with the research he was talking about. But then he started thinking about the military and the repercussions and their reaction to it. And to me, it sort of swayed what he was saying because there really is not much they can do. I really don't think there is much they can do because the world is going to... They don't need any more bad press. And I understand what you're saying about they don't care what anyone thinks. I think they do. To an extent, they do. They care about the coverage that they're getting. And maybe Bush doesn't care, but a lot of the administration does. And they don't know how
well, see, the saddest thing out of all of this is that I think the Republican Party believes that they can save their congressional hides by starting the war, or at least starting the run-up to the war. Remember, this is we are coming up on the time right now when 4 years ago they started the drumbeat to what happened in Iraq. Remember when they said you don't roll out a new product in August? It was in October that George Bush went to Cincinnati and quoted the yellow cake thing, even though he'd been told it was a lie.
I think the greatest irony in all of this will be if, no matter if they do the run up to the war, they do everything, and it's still people want. The Democratic vote, and then they get back the House.
Well, I'm you could be right, or I could be right, or it could be a combination of the two, David. But the thing is, we must keep our eyes open for the political chicanery, for the political skullduggery, for the political dirty tricks, because they are going to start coming at us so fast that we can't keep up with them.
I'm with you on that one, Bob. Definitely.
And I'll tell you what I'll do. I hope you'll still be listening. We'll run this audio from the retired Air Force general here in just a very little bit.
Okay.
And you can see what you think about what he, because he's saying that he is certain. He's certain, David.
I've heard that.
Yeah, that there are already military operations inside Iran, and that makes chills run down my spine.
Well, I'll definitely keep my eye open for what is coming down the pike, most definitely.
All right. Well, thanks, David. I appreciate it. Have a great evening.
All right. No problem, Bob.
Bye now. And onward to, to Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, welcome aboard.
Hey, Bob. Well, I'm so glad you have the audio of that article, because I just read that article today, and I'm very interested in hearing it. He's absolutely convinced that we're already conducting military operations inside Iran, and he quoted the article, all kinds of. I just can't wait to hear the audio. And that's just amazing, is it not?
Well, you know, I did a double take when I first read it, because I wanted to read, my mind wanted to read what I've been reading, and that is that there will be. But this guy is saying there already is.
Yeah, he was.
And it was like being on the roller coaster. When you start downhill, the bottom just fell out of my stomach.
Yeah, I felt the same way. He was saying there was some people called up to Capitol Hill from, the CIA or some organization to be questioned about it, and none of them bothered to show up. This was sort of a secret thing. But anyway, Angelica conjured me tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's all her fault. She was talking about the PTL club and Tammy Faye and Jim Baker and all that kind of stuff.
And the running,
yeah.
The running mascara.
Yeah, I remember those days, too. And she was saying that people that had any intellect, didn't buy that. She used the word intellect. And I just want to amplify how true that is. You know, I grew up in the South, and I mean, you can get called a commie or a liberal and all those, but those are minor insults. If you get called an intellectual...
Dirty word.
That is fighting words. Intellectual is absolutely the most disdained thing, and I'm trying to figure that out. I mean, these people are not all that bright. I think most of us, when we encounter someone, we can immediately assess, physically if the person is stronger than we are, better looking than we are, and we do these physical comparisons immediately, but I don't think it takes too many sentences for any of us to determine if someone is smarter than we are, okay? These people fall a little bit lower on the bell curve than the majority of your audience, and so what if you lived in a world where just about everybody you ran into was smarter than you? I think they have a real issue with that. And, people, we write books, we research things. We're everything that they despise. These people were the slow learners in class, and there's just so many more of them than there are of us, and they hate us.
They do.
They do. They despise us.
Well, but see, there's nothing new in it, Peter, because way back when they were having the McCarthy hearings, one of the things you could be accused of being was a communist intellectual.
Oh, yes, that we've lost using that phrase. That the intellectual is really a whole lot of it. They don't like it because we're just damn spiders.
And coming from the tradition I've come from, and maybe you've heard it growing up too, in your church tradition. Here's a phrase, a blast from your past. They have thought themselves right out of their heavenly eternity.
Yes.
They've thought themselves right out of their salvation.
That's right. They have intellectualized it to the point that their relationship with Jesus is meaningless.
Right, when all they needed to do is understand that God said it, I believe it, and that settles it.
And that settles it. And it's absolutely every word of it is true. But another thing I was going to bring up is the Dobsons and all those that have brand new ammunition. There's a report came out yesterday, and I'm sure they're aware of it. It was covered by Reuters. The New York newspapers can't handle it and what have you. I'm sure it was handled all over the country, but they're not going to be happy with this anyway. A record number of companies, United States companies, are turning gay friendly, and this is really going to upset them. Now,
yeah, Walmart.
Well, there's a group in Washington that's called Human Rights Campaign, and they put out something called the Corporate Equality Index, and it's a form that corporations fill out. Well, this year, and it's unprecedented, really, 138 major U.S. companies scored 100% in the Corporate Equality Index. And when you compare that to 2002, there were only 13 companies that scored 100% in that index. And it's got to do with things like same-sex benefits and time off if your partner's ill. And
I don't know.
and all, you know, all the standard stuff that, you know, it's nothing, you know, that anybody else doesn't.
Oh, well, the American Family Association will be right on that.
Well, it's going to be translated into "we're under attack." And this is how they play that. It's you know, we're being attacked, and this is the way of corporate attack. But the companies that are guilty of it are guilty is perhaps the wrong word, are companies like IBM, which has a main thrust in supercomputing these days. I don't know how they're going to boycott supercomputers. Oh, Lord. And, you know, there's just the whole list of companies. But here's the best part.
We're going back to the abacus, Brother Peter.
Guess who scored zero?
I can't wait.
There were three companies that scored zero. ExxonMobil. Some Midwestern retailer that I've never heard of. Some of the listeners probably know them. It's called Meijer Incorporated, M-E-I-J-E-R. It's a retailer in the Midwest.
That's a newbie for me, too, and I thought I knew them all.
Yeah, and in Plano, Texas, Perot Systems also scored zero.
Perot Systems?
Yes.
As in H. Ross Perot?
I guess so. I don't know what kind of... I guess it's a PowerPoint presentation company. But in any case, those are the zeros.
But, you know, but no, if it's associated with Perot, we do at least have the comfort of knowing it's pro-Martian.
Yeah, well, that too. Oh, Lord. So anyway, there's new ammunition that's going to be fired from the Christian right over the next couple of weeks. You just wait. We're under attack, and companies are turning away, and blah, 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 blah. So it's all going to feed, and it's all going together hand in glove. That, you know, they're going to start listing again. The gas pump's cheaper, and it's all coming together just like every other election. Damnedest thing I ever saw.
It's like watching ants in an ant farm, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. It's pretty damn predictable.
They drop the cupcake about a month and a half before the election, and the next thing you know, the little ants are swarming all over it.
Yeah, well, that's true. And one of your callers earlier was talking about how we're people get so grateful that the gas prices have dropped, and it was Greg Pallas. Was it your show he called? I get so confused.
It was Bruce today.
Was it Bruce? I get so confused. It's like one giant head-on party all day long. So, yeah, Greg was saying that we get all grateful that gas prices have dropped, and really they've been punching us in the gut for months and months and months and intend to do it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was...
You know, welcome to the circus.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is... P.T. Barnum's This Way to the Egress, he would be so proud.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a con. And the question is, how many of us are stupid enough to fall for it? I don't think there's anybody in this audience that is dumb enough to go for that kind of foolishness.
Yeah. Yeah, we're definitely on the high end of the bell curve, or we wouldn't be here. We don't last long if we're not. Well,
evolution in action.
Yeah. I'll talk to you later. You have a great evening.
Peter, take care. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Good night.
All right. Bye now. And Agnes, can we take? No, we take. Okay. Straight onto the phones. Cody joins us. Hey, Cody, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Good to be here.
Glad to have you.
I wanted to say our foreign policy must always be an extension of this nation's domestic policy. Our safest guide to what we do abroad is a good look at what we are doing at home. That's Lyndon Johnson first said that, and Josh Wolf said that today when they revoked his bail and took him into custody while he's still pending appeal. Also wanted to say that we're having a benefit concert and having some speakers tomorrow, if anybody's listening in the San Francisco Bay Area, at 34 Mason Street in San Francisco. It's going to be from 8 to midnight. Judith Miller is going to be there to speak. We're also having live music there and just trying to raise money and raise awareness.
Well, that's a great undertaking. How's he holding up in the incarceration so far?
Well, you know, he just had to turn himself in today at 1:00, and it's pretty early to tell. JoshWolf.net will be updated. You know, he sends in emails out information, so I mean everybody can keep posted.
Will you be doing any live blogging at the benefit?
I don't believe there'll be any live blogging at the benefit, but I mean, you know, there'll be some good speakers there, and you know, everybody's welcome. It's trying to collect donations, and
people can donate online as well, right?
People can donate online at joshwolf.net and PayPal account, and from here, just trying to take it to an in-bank decision with the Ninth Circuit, and from there to the Supreme Court, trying to go all the way, and hopefully somewhere along the way get some justice here.
God, I hope so. I hope so, because as we discussed, Cody, this in the the more you can it doesn't matter if you're intimidating someone that you said isn't a journalist, and then you said he is a journalist. Now he's a blogger. Now he's a journalist. The fact of the matter is, eventually it will come to all of us. I'm not a journalist. Okay, I have done journalism. I've been a journalist, but I do not hold myself out to the world as a journalist. I'm a guy with a bad attitude and a microphone and a big stack of news stories. But the thing is, eventually, it can be extended to me. Guantanamo could be my home if they decide that that's what they want it to be. And
that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about creating a precedent here, and then next time they'll just encroach on us just a little bit further, and then point back to Josh and say, "Listen, we did it in this case, and it was legit."
That's so your precedent.
We're going to push a little bit further this time, and it's like what they tried to do to Greg Palast when he was down in Baker, Mississippi, taking those pictures of that camp.
Right.
And they were going to charge him with the anti-terrorism law. And people threw a fit, and they backed off. I mean, the only thing that saves you is public outcry and the media. The media saves a lot of people's butts, and when they turn a blind eye, people with power are going to abuse their power.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct. And it's the old axiom of the camel's nose under the tent. The reason it's not just some sort of 1001 Arabian Nights sort of analogy. The idea of the camel's nose under the tent is that the camel gets his nose under the tent and will keep pushing its nose under the tent until the tent collapses. That's why it's a valid analogy for what you're describing here. Of course, other authors have described it in terms of a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happens is, if you're a little bit afraid of what might happen to you, what happened to Josh might happen to you, then maybe you'll be a little less likely of taking videotape or of taking notes or paying attention or writing down badge numbers or license plate numbers. I think about what happened to the Greensboro group in North Carolina this past January 31st. There's a guy in plain clothes videoing, looking very threatening, and a bunch of people get arrested because they went up and they asked the guy who he was. And then he said, and it just turned into a nasty situation. That guy could have been a kiddie diddler.
Absolutely. And the Supreme Court calls it a chilling effect. And that's what they're trying to do. Put the chilling effect and keep the media dumbed down, because they have been dumbed down. And that's why citizens media is this phenomenon that's rising, like powersofmorrison.com and all these other great independent media sites that are going to take a bite out of the mainstream, because people, the mainstream media's opened up that market by turning a blind eye to a lot of what the establishment right now has been doing.
Well, and there's a reason beyond the stated ones in the net neutrality debate, Cody.
Oh, right.
Because if the major telecoms get to charge, and the cable companies get to start charging an extra fee to me in order for you to stream this program, they can shut me down. They can shut the entire Head On Radio network down. And they can say, they're liberal and they don't talk our party line, so we're going to charge a tax on them, but we're not going to charge Free Republic. Or we're not going to charge, whatever right-wing yackers are out there. And thereby they can, because right now the internet scares the Republican establishment half to death, because it's the one area of media where liberals and progressives are miles and miles and miles ahead of the conservative movement. I mean, they've got direct mail, they've got the phone banking, they've got the mainstream media, they got the mainstream newspapers, they got the Supreme Court, they got the Congress, they got the president. They got the state's governors. They got the state legislatures. They don't have the internet.
Right. And look what happened to Dre, the other columnist from Powers of Morrison, who had his cameras taken and was put in jail for 48 hours. And, he was covering, Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C.? And he was wearing a press pass. He was identified himself. And they're abusing their power. And we're just keep making some noise, and hopefully You know, and it's not even hopefully, it's going to happen. It's going to shift back. The pendulum is going to swing back in their direction, and they're going to become a minority party again.
But the trip that pendulum takes backward, Cody, is going to be a dangerous ride for every last one of us.
Yes, that's true.
So, you know, we've got to at least have our eyes open. Well, listen, I hope everybody in the Bay Area that can reach at all humanly possible. You said 34 Mason Street?
34 Mason Street, and joshwolf.net has instructions and information, and also my page at powersandmorrison.com does as well.
All right, wonderful. Thanks, Cody.
Thank you.
Bye. Take care. Bye now. Okay, Agnes, a break. When we come back, we're going to play the audio of this CNN exchange with crack veteran journalist Wolf Blitzer. But it is chilling. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next. That's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Sometimes I like to just let the music roll. 20 minutes before the hour. Yeah, about 15 minutes or so left in tonight's program. If you want to get that last little bee out from under your bonnet, that last little burr out from under your saddle, please feel free to do so. Now, I want to go to this audio from CNN. See, we're crediting it. It's from CNN. It's crackhead journalist Wolf Blitzer. And basically, this is a conversation between Blitzer and retired Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner. Now, Gardner has taught at the Army's National War College, and he's previously suggested that U.S. forces were already on the ground in Iran. Let's go ahead and hear what he had this time around.
Is a U.S. military strike against Iran, and would it lead to all-out war? Joining us now is retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner. He's taught strategy and military operations at the National War College, the Air War College, and the Naval War College. Colonel, thanks very much for coming in. You've just prepared a paper for the Century Foundation entitled Considering the U.S. Military Option for Iran. You speak to a lot of people plugged in. What is your bottom line? How close, in your opinion, is the U.S., the Bush administration, to giving that go-ahead order?
It's been given. In fact, we've probably been executing military operations inside Iran for at least 18 months. The evidence is overwhelming.
Well, let me press you on that. When you say it's been given, the president says he wants diplomacy to work to convince the Iranian government to stop enriching uranium, to not go forward. I would tell
the Iranian people
we have no desire for conflict. He told David Ignatius of the Washington Post the other day. So what does that mean? The order has been given.
We are conducting military operations inside Iran right now. The evidence is overwhelming from both the Iranians, Americans, and from congressional sources.
What is military operation?
Sure.
Define that.
Sure. They probably have had two objectives going back 18 months. The first was to gather intelligence. Where is the Iranian nuclear program? The second has been to prepare dissident groups for phase two, which will be the strike, which will come as the next phase, I think.
Preparing intelligence, that's understandable. Using all sorts of means. They want to know what the Iranians are up to in terms of their nuclear program. But are you suggesting that U.S. military forces, special operations forces, or others are on the ground right now in Iran?
Yes, sir. Certainly. Absolutely clear. The evidence is overwhelming from lots of sources. And again, most of them you can read public. You know, Seymour Hersh has done good work on it, and there are lots of other people who have done that. I've talked to Iranians. I asked an Iranian ambassador to the IAEA, what's this I hear about Americans being there? He said to me, well, we've captured some people who work with them. We've confirmed that they're there.
Yeah, but, you know, these guys, the Iranians, you can't necessarily believe what they're saying.
No,
they could
some dissidents. No, they're pathological liars.
And say these are American spies. They do that all the time.
Sure. The House Committee on Emerging Threats tried to have a hearing some weeks ago in which they asked the Department of State and Defense to come and answer this question because it's serious enough to be answered without congressional approval, and they didn't come to the hearing. There are sources that I talked to on the Hill who believe that that's true and it's being done without congressional oversight.
Look, I was once a Pentagon correspondent many years ago, and in those days and in these days, and as Jamie McIntyre just reported, and as you well know from your time of active duty at the Pentagon in the U.S., military, these guys are planning contingency operations for almost
everything.
Crazy
old
Canada
coot
goes to war against the United States. They've got a contingency plan.
Okay, different now. Two differences. Number one, we've learned from Time magazine today that some U.S. naval forces had been alerted for deployment. That is a major step. That's first. The second thing is the sources suggest the plan is not in the Pentagon. The plan has gone to the White House. That's not normal planning. When the plan goes to the White House, that means we've gone to a different state.
You think it's possible there's a little psychological warfare being played on Ahmadinejad right now to rattle him, to spread the word, to put out this kind of information to get him nervous, perhaps a little bit more agreeable to the diplomatic option?
It's possible. It's also possible that this path was selected a long time ago. You recall that even before Gulf II, that at a time when the president said, we have no plan on my desk, in the summer of 2002, we began bombing Iraq, Operation Southern Focus. Without congressional approval, without the UN sanctions, we went ahead and began bombing.
Well, the argument at that time was if there were violations of the no-fly zone, U.S. warplanes were flying in the north and the south, and there were rockets.
Shut up, Wolf. You're no smarter than this guy.
They could take those up.
Yes, but it was a campaign to begin the war before the war began. And, you know, I'd suggest the evidence is there.
Right, so you see a similar pattern right now.
Exactly.
We're going to follow this closely. Colonel Sam Gardner, thanks for very much.
Okay.
We'll look forward to reading your report that the Century Foundation is putting out as well.
Got that? Now, who's more compelling in that exchange? Wolf Blitzer, who just ceaselessly attempts to make excuses for the, you know, for the Bush administration starting this war. Well, you know, but George Bush said he wants to have peace. Jesus, Wolf, he said he wanted peace at the same time that he already had the war plans laid out for Iraq. You know, how stupid are these people? I know. Really, really stupid. Hey, Wolf, buddy, I got this bridge. It's in Brooklyn. It's mine, really. I'll sell it to you for cheap. Jeepers. Let's go to the phones. Richard joins us. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Hey, I got steam coming out of my ears. I just came home from a managed care commission meeting, healthcare.
Oh, dear.
And I just walked in the door, so I don't know what you've been talking about.
Well, it's been a hodgepodge all night long, government intrusion into people's lives. Of course, it's Wednesday, it's prayer meeting. We've had a lovely conversation with a Presbyterian minister who's written a new book talking about the globalization of the Christian right. Just another wonderful night on Head On.
Great. I will download it. I'll always catch your Wednesday show.
Well, I'm awfully glad you do.
Well,
so you got steam coming out your ears?
Well, I'm a musician, you know.
And right.
So, I mean, I'm a musician at heart and by training, basically, although I work in high tech. And so I am a commissioner on a commission that deals mostly with how you fund health care. So we're talking a lot about money and juggling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the people who mostly are in charge are very conscientious about trying to get every possible category of people covered, especially uninsured people. And but when it comes to what the covered people have to pay, that part is a little frustrating to me. In other words, my premiums are not that much lower than, let's say, the premiums that somebody pays a commercial health plan.
Yeah.
That's a disappointing part. Another disappointing part is that, let's say, if I see some sort of healthcare provider who's contracted, you know, is not part of the system, those people are paid the same scale that Medicaid would pay.
Okay.
So they're not being paid very much. They're being paid bottom dollar. And
sure.
Sometimes when I find out what they have gotten paid, I'm a little bit in shock. You know, a lot of doctors won't take Medicaid. I don't know how it is in...
No, they will. Yeah, they won't take Medicaid. Well, in West Virginia, most of them have to take Medicaid if they actually want to treat people because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a whole lot of people, a majority of people in this state have some sort of state-sponsored or federally sponsored health care.
Yeah.
Between Medicaid, Medicare, and workers' compensation.
Okay. See, in my system, it's the county's health department, so they have to take all the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the members, you know, maybe 20,000 people, are on one form of public assistance or another. So those of us who pay, you know, over the counter for it are along for the ride. We get the same care that
right.
they do. And that's not bad. You know, the good part of this is that any doctors who are working for the system are there because they want to be.
Sure.
They want to be serving this population.
Because their hearts are in the right place.
That's right. And the same is true of the nurses. And you know, maybe Agnes could smile when she hears this.
She's smiling now.
Yeah, our nurses, really are happy working in this system.
And are they unionized, Richard?
You know, I don't even... Yes, they, of course they are. Yeah.
Good.
I know that because my nurse practitioner was a negotiator.
Okay.
It's funny. It just... their relations are so good that, you know, they almost never hint about striking. And it's funny. It's like my first reaction to your question was a blank. You know?
Because that's probably because you've got a good institutional relationship with them.
In general, I mean, they threatened to strike last year because the county was up against the wall, and you know, financially they're up against the wall.
Well, you know, you're living a microcosm of what's going on in America, I think.
Well, what's unusual, of course, is that this is a pioneering county-sponsored health system, and. A county-sponsored HMO, and it's not even new. The county employees all can buy in for a very, very small amount of money. I mean, what I pay $525 a month premium just for me.
Mm-hmm.
And a temporary county employee pays $8 for the same coverage.
Wow, and the county picks up the rest?
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that they...
Damn, that's forward thinking, Richard. I mean, that's really forward thinking.
Well, it's not that expensive, and the reason is because when it's that cheap, the members go. You know, they go for treatment. They're in good condition.
Well, and they, you know, and if you augment care with wellness, and you don't squabble about things like preventive health care and things like paying, you know, nicotine patches or paying for birth control, things like that, then you're making for a more well population.
That's correct.
Which is going to cut down on your long term high maintenance
outlays. That's true.
And,
you know, our Medicaid people get the same care, but they get on board when they're sicker, you know. And,
well, right.
And so that's more expensive.
Well, you know, and some of that's education, though, Richard, because you've got to take, you've got a real education curve and an education obligation with your population. I don't know too many 20-somethings, and I'm not criticizing them because I was there once. I don't know too many people who are 20-something years old who are sitting around going, gosh, I wonder about my health coverage, because you're bulletproof at 20-something.
That's true.
But
that's
if
very
you,
true.
You
know, you're never going to die.
Yeah, but if you take that demographic and you start teaching them to, you know, go get your physical, keep an eye on your health care, you know, pay attention to what your doctor tells you, you know, push the... Listen, as a nicotine junkie, I will be the first person to say that they're, I wish there had been, you know, everybody said, yeah, don't smoke, but all the cool kids were out behind the gym when I was 15.
That's
you know what
right.
I mean?
And I can tell you how I stopped smoking, but I won't do it today. I got a good way to do it, but today let's skip that.
Yeah, I want to check. I want a non-smoking program at the Betty Ford Clinic. You know.
I got something that'll work.
Okay, but we're running out of time. But you've got steam coming out your ears. Is it? Is it a funding issue or?
Well, it's the thing that bothers me. I think I'm finally figuring out why our system is as expensive as it is. In other words, we do beat every other health HMO in terms of price and what the people get for the money. Here's the quandary. As a government agency, we have to meet all kinds of criteria that the other guys don't have to. We cover more kinds of people. We have to fill out more forms. We have to, meet every little nit, you know, of a federal program, for instance. And I think that a lot of our money is being siphoned off into meeting these criteria, which we do meet, you know.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like, though, that you're proving that quality health care could be delivered to every American.
Oh, absolutely. That's exciting. That's the exciting part, you know. I think we're on the cusp of this. What you can see, I mean, I once went to the emergency room because I reacted to a drug, and we have an advice nurse, and the advice nurse sent me to, you know, get to an ER, which I did, and I got billed by accident for this, and the private hospital billed me $2,000 for my trip to the ER. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, no kidding.
The ambulance ride down there was another 800 something. And so I tracked that. You know, I followed the private hospital naturally billed me and set a collection agency on my tail on the same day. And so
they're merciless, you know.
Yeah, so I went to our people, you know, and I said, what happened with the bill? They said, we never got the bill. So then I called these other people and said, look, you know, you gotta get a bill to my provider. Okay. They did it, but then I found out what they settled for. And they took $67.
On a $2,000 bill.
A $2,000 bill. So that was square. And so I look at this, and on one hand I go, oh my God, you know, $2,000. But then on the other side, I know what they did for me, and I know that they lost money on my trip. The private hospital could not possibly have made.
Well, there's a lot of blue smoke and mirrors, and there's a lot of shell game involved in the medical industry.
Well, you know, every time I see a contracted provider, which I'm doing now for something else. I'm asking them point blank. I'm saying, look, are you being compensated adequately for what you're doing? And because I just want to know. And I don't want them cutting corners on me because they're not being paid right. And they're telling me that they're doing okay.
Yeah.
That's the funny part. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just part of the reason.
Well, it's the middlemen who don't feel like they're making enough money. Richard, we've run out of time this evening. We got to have longer for these conversations sometime.
I know. I just walked in the
door. I understand. Well, have yourself a wonderful evening. All right.
You too, Bob.
And I need the no smoking remedy as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll do it on the air with you. Cause,
okay.
Yeah, I can talk it. Great. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks. Take care,
bye,
Richard.
Agnes.
She says bye. All right, that's it. Whew, like a whirlwind, you guys are. The show tonight was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, who has a smile and a kiss for everyone. It was announced by Brian Reznor, the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida. We have the most wonderful chat room moderators on planet Earth, bar none, period, end of sentence. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs and the podcasting on the Head On Radio Network. Our simulcasting partner is Shelby LaPrey at RadioPower.org, where you can also hear the program every day, and we do appreciate our affiliation with her. Every day, the programs on the horn happen because there are several thousand dedicated members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who go out and build the American dream. And in so doing, and supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
Right now, Mike Malloy.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. I'll tell you what, let's just start out with joining CNN. Bush is on the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier, and he is giving a speech in front of one of his favorite audiences, people who are captive and can't do anything but stand there and listen. Let's just join it live for a few minutes.
In Imperial Japan, Allied forces destroyed entire cities, while enemy leaders who started the conflict were safe until the final days. Military power was used to end a regime by breaking a nation. Today, we have the greater power to free a nation by breaking a dangerous and aggressive regime. With new tactics and precision weapons, we can achieve military objectives without directing violence against civilians. No device of man can remove the tragedy from war.